Time for Mac Break Weekly. Here we come on the 30th anniversary of the Macintosh. Dave Hamilton will talk about that. He's here from Mac Geek Gab. We'll also give you the latest Apple news, including a settlement with the FTC that Tim Cook says is double dipping. It's all next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 386, recorded January 21st, 2014. The Path to Madness. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by 99 Designs, the world's largest graphic design marketplace. 99 Designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of more than 270,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/MBW to receive a free power pack upgrade valued at $99. And by FreshBooks, the simple cloud accounting solution that helps thousands of entrepreneurs and small business owners save time billing and get paid faster. Try it free for 30 days at GetFreshBooks.com and join over 5 million users running their business with ease. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to Squarespace.com and don't forget to use the offer code MACBREAK1. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we talk about Macs weekly. And that pretty much says it all. And I don't know what we're going to do for the next 6 months where there's no news, but we'll figure it out. We've got a good panel. That's one way to solve this. Alex Lindsay in studio with us today.
We'll make it up.
Back from Rwanda.
I am. Sunday.
Sunday. So you now, how do you sleep? I mean, do you ever get used to any particular time zone?
I don't really exist on a time zone anymore. I mean, it's just like I don't really get jet lag. I don't. I kind of regulate it all with caffeine and whiskey.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
It's just, you know, it's a lot of caffeine in the morning. Balls. Okay. A lot of whiskey at night.
All right. Renee Ritchie also here from iMore.com. Dressed
iMore.com.
Appropriately. Look, he's got a Mac.
Frozen Montreal. It's cold. I'm shivering.
A Mac Classic behind him there, it looks like.
That's Peter Cohen's photograph. He was doing he's doing a whole week of festivities leading up to their birthday celebration.
Oh, we should
he's
do
been
that.
Doing it. That's why I think this was his fond memories of Mac retrospective.
Hey, Burke, why don't you load up the back of me with all the old Mac? We got a Mac original, I think a 128K Mac back there. Also here, Mr. Andy Inaka with his friends Ralph and Ed.
Way to go there, Leo boy.
from Chicago Sun-Times. Is this a honeymooner's day or something?
No, it is a found a really awesome. It's really weird when you see like the characters, the actors from like a classic 1950s television in high definition and full color.
Yeah.
So when you see one of these like studio promo photos that someone decided to scan in at a really good resolution,
yeah, that's
it's
awesome.
Like, oh my God. So that's what color the pinstriping on Ed Norton's vest really is.
It's funny about history. A funny thing about history, because you get so used to seeing like Abe Lincoln like in kind of grainy daguerreotypes. That when they do the colorization, it suddenly becomes very. Oh look, we really have quite a display now behind us that's growing. We've got the 25th anniversary Mac. We've got the original Mac.
Remember little Duo
PowerBook 5200. Is that the Duo? Is that the Duo?
Is that a Duo?
No.
Patrick Delahanty, what is that you're bringing? That's a titanium G4. Wow. Okay,
not only is it an impressive display, Leo, but what an awesome demonstration of the power you wield in this organization.
That's like a pit crew, isn't it?
The idlest whim, and suddenly you're surrounded by classic Macintoshes.
The pit crew. Then they put me down. It's amazing. Thank you, guys. You guys rock. Hey, look who's here also. First time, I guess, on the show. I can't believe it. Dave Hamilton, old friend from the Mac Observer and the Mac Geek Gab Premium Podcast.
How you doing? It's
on his Nessie.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Right. Everybody wants to know that Quicksilver iMac behind you. I mean, Mac Pro behind you. Is that in service?
It is. I had to replace the power supply recently, but other than that, it still runs.
That's a G5?
Mirrored drive door G4.
Ooh, mirrored drive door.
Yeah, if it was on, you could hear it.
You say mirror drive door real fast, it sounds like Mordor.
That's right.
that is beautiful. I don't think we have one of those, Dave, so you've got us.
Well, that's why I'm here.
You've got us.
We used to have some.
Yeah, you used to have some. What is some in pixel core terms?
Oh, eight or hundreds? Nine of them. I mean, not a lot of them.
Hundreds.
Yeah, I have to admit that, you know, your company grows, and we got this thing called Meraki. Are you familiar with?
Yeah, I love Meraki. Yeah.
So we have Meraki on. You know, we're putting it on all of our nodes, but all of our computers have Meraki. And so Meraki
you
is.
You could buy Meraki built in.
No, it's a little installer, and it installs in it into the background, and then you can see where all your computers are. So
oh, you're not talking about the Wi-Fi router, Meraki.
I am.
Oh, you are.
So basically, all of our entire Cisco Meraki is the.
They bought it. This is a sad. Actually, in my opinion, Meraki is a sad story because originally Meraki was designed to give internet Wi-Fi everywhere.
Right.
It was going to be a mesh network.
It was been absorbed.
Yeah, it was very altruistic. You'd buy a Meraki, and then you'd share your internet with everybody else, and the mesh would be passed along, and only one person in an area had to have actual internet access. Right. Something went wrong with that.
Well, they didn't make a lot of money. that's exactly what went wrong.
But you could, with the Merakis, you could have a landing page and ask people for money if you wanted. I mean,
right.
It was kind of cool. But anyway, so Cisco bought them, and now what is it?
Is now what we can do is, so we have
cloud
these switches.
Managed switches?
Yeah, so what we do is we have the switches, and so we have a switch, and I can basically... You know, if you have a switch remotely, I don't have to do any VPNing, you know, in. I don't have to use the VPN. Yeah. I simply, if I'm connected to that, it thinks that my DC office and the Rwandan office and the Petaluma office are all one office. Like, so it's completely seamless.
So it's basically a WAN, a secure WAN.
Mm-hmm.
With everyone, no matter where they are geographically, who has one of these routers.
Exactly. And it'll create mask the IPs and, you know, all the other stuff. And so it's...
So it's kind of like, what was that? Sushi.
Sushi.
Hamachi. It's kind of like a Hamachi network.
I don't know enough about Hamachi networks. And I have to admit, I'm not a network... Aaron Mailer is the one that figured this all out for us. He uses it to manage an entire college. And so...
Oh, neat.
But what's cool is with all of our computers... with all of our computers, we can.
I want this.
When we have this set up, I can see. I can go to my dashboard. You know, I don't think you're gonna be able to see this on the. I don't know if I want to show it on the thing.
No, don't show it.
Hold on, but I'll, what you can do is basically have a dashboard that'll let you see all the computers that have it installed, and we have a tendency to lose our retinas. So, they're in different kits and everything else, and so knowing exactly where the last time that they logged in is very helpful.
Yeah.
So.
This also does 802.11ac. It does some of the higher end stuff. No, AC does doesn't do the beamforming, but it looks like
it's really cool.
It's pretty sophisticated.
It's a very
high very performance. Cool wow, yeah. I didn't realize that they'd gone corporate, so they've become an enterprise solution.
They got really big, they got really popular, and then they got bought by Cisco. they're laughing all the way to the bank.
Why don't we have this? I don't because we don't have people all over the world logging in. You have.
Well, and like for instance, with our elementals that go on the road,
yeah,
we've got a couple sets of elementals that go, you know, that travel around. And what we're about to do is add these all to the elementals so that when they come up, their static IPs don't change, you know, from our perspective, so that those remain all the same, and we can log into them from anywhere. You know, they just kind of show up as if they were in the office, so that if we need to administer them on the road, we can.
Somebody in the chat room, Secman, says it's not cheap because you have to pay a yearly license fee and things like that.
It's $1,500 for 3 years, I think, per device. So it is
per device.
Yeah, yeah. We
$500 a year per device.
Well, we spent like $12,000 or $15,000 on the hardware.
I don't want one. Never mind. Cancel.
Well, the little ones. They have little ones that are like $400 or $500, but the ones that we put in have to manage, you know, a lot of hardware.
It's enterprise. I understand.
That's the key thing about understanding enterprise-grade hardware. If it's something where any normal human being would say, oh, my frickin' God, that is way too much to spend on one of those. And if they're selling them that you know that there is a percentage of the population for whom this is cheap money, for the problems that they solve. Every time I see an $8,000 router, I think that I'm trying to figure out who it is that would pay double for that because I know that there are people who would.
We have a... G. Miola in the chat room, who's apparently an enterprise guy, says he uses Ubiquiti instead. He tried Meraki, and he likes Ubiquiti. Does the same thing, I guess. I don't know. Anyway,
I'm afraid I'm not a network guy. So Aaron said this is great, and he put it in, and it turns out that it's great.
When you do this stuff, you have to trust somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
You just have to trust somebody because if you're not that guy, and
yeah,
You can't be that guy for everything.
Aaron's much smarter at that than I am, so I just listen to him and go down that path.
One of the reasons, well, Dave...
And you listen to him because he recommends stuff that works, right?
Exactly.
That's true.
Yeah.
And he's using it in a whole college with hundreds of nodes, and, you know, like, this is his hobby. I mean, this is what he does, so...
One of the reasons Dave's with us every year, Macworld, you and your what do you call them, Mac All Stars, your band?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the it was Paul Kent who now runs, you know, all of Macworld Expo. Yeah. But about I want to say 13 years ago, he came up with the idea that we all go to these parties at Macworld Expo, and there's a band that plays in the corner that everybody does their best to ignore while they're talking to each other. And it's because it's some nameless band that nobody knows about. And so Paul had the idea that, listen, we got a lot of musicians in the community. We should form a band.
Yeah.
And in 2001, we did that. And Paul pulled us all together, and we had the first gig in New York City at the Cooler. And we were horrible. Horrible. Oh, God. There is unfortunately video of this to back up my claims here.
Thank you, YouTube.
Right.
Nobody fails at private anymore, right? Everybody has to fail in public.
I know that's
now.
The problem.
Yeah.
So Dave, I'm taking from the drums over your right shoulder that you are the drummer in the band.
I am. That's right.
Do you explode at every performance?
I try not to turn into a green globule. That's right.
And the band is getting together for the 30th anniversary of the Macintosh announcement, which was January 24th, 3 days from now. But there's a big event at Flint Center where the original announcement was.
Right.
This shows you how long ago. I'm in Flint Center.
Wouldn't
it
be awesome if we could stream this live?
Yeah, what a great idea. Have you guys thought about that before?
We would, but it would cut into DVD sales, and we don't want to do that. So,
for those of you who are listening that don't know what a DVD is, in the last century, there was a piece of plastic that people would put media on, and they would call it a DVD. It is not.
We did volunteer to go down and stream it. You know, bring our equipment and everything and stream it, because I think everybody who is watching this show, certainly, and everybody who's a Mac fan would be interested. This is going to be quite an event. You really should just go. More information at Mac30th.com. The event is January 25th, the next day.
It's Saturday night. And there's going to be panels, people like Dan Kotke. I think Dan's actually one of the organizers, but they're going to have a lot of the original Mac design team speaking. They were going to have Ridley Scott, but now they've got some other assistant
who did the 1984 commercial. From the website, there's a series of panels. The first one, Conception. John Markoff will moderate. Dan Kotke, who was one of the first employees of Apple. Larry Tesler, who was a Apple scientist. And I can't remember what Larry did. I don't know, on the original Mac team. I'm not sure. Mark LeBrun, Bill Fernandez. These are original Apple, like pre-Mac guys. Then the birth of the Mac, Stephen Levy will moderate that, the great writer who did Hackers and so many wonderful books. Bill Atkinson. This is the Mac team now. Bill Atkinson, Randy Wigginton, Andy Hertzfeld, Bruce Horn, George Crow.
They collected them all.
I'd love to see Susan Kare there, who did the icons. There's a few people you'd like to see there. But
she might be there. I know she's been contacted.
I see some TBAs. Yeah, so that's good news. Yeah, there's people who I'd love to see. So, well, you got Hertzfeld and Atkinson. You've got two great guys, Randy Wigginton, Bruce Horn, who did The Finder. Then the coming of age, Dan Farber, formerly of CNET. I don't know what Dan's doing these days. Maybe he's still at CNET. And third-party developers. And I don't know these names as well. Charlie Jackson, Jim Ree, Heidi Roizen, I know, of course.
Mm.
Ty Roberts, David Bunnell, who did.
Is there still tickets left?
Yeah.
There are still tickets left.
How many bodies at home?
About 1,800 people, I think, total. Mm.
It's a nice place to go.
Yeah, it is.
How much is it?
It's a great room.
Let's just check. I'm going to find some tickets.
A little over $100, maybe $100 even.
Tickets
like
are not sold out, so you don't have to worry about selecting a session. Your ticket is for all of them. We should really go.
You guys should go.
Yeah.
I'm going to try.
And then after the three sessions, the band plays, and we're better than we were in 2001.
General admission, it is a little pricey, $140.80. That's with the Ticketmaster premium. $109. So there's a variety of choices.
So a lot of us have heard a lot of these people speak before, and you do have the impression of someone that you're really glad you heard these stories firsthand.
Yeah.
Because I mean, if you wanted to hear Alan Turing, your window of opportunity has long passed.
Yeah.
And a lot of these innovators are the people that you really, really appreciate only when you read about them in history books, where you think, gee, I really wish I'd love to get 15 minutes with this person, or I'd love to see him explain from his point of view what it was like to develop this idea. And this is one of those opportunities, because if you want to look at critical inventions, or excuse me, critical consumer products or computers of the 20th century, Mac has got to be up in the top 10.
And this team is an amazing team. They are inviting anybody who was on the Mac team to be there. Dress is, quote, old Apple casual.
Shoes optional.
If you've got one of those,
all overdressed.
If you've got one of those great illustration, you know, kind of abstract illustrations of the Mac with the mouse coming off of it, definitely.
I don't think I have any of that stuff, but
Wow, I would love to be at this event. And I'm sorry we can't stream it, but we did approach them and quite reasonably they said, well, you know, we need part of this is expensive to put on, and so we need to monetize it. So. They're going to try to figure out a way to make videos available somehow via, say, DVD. But really cool. And so I did want to give them a nice big plug. And if you go to Mac30th.com, if you happen to be in the Bay Area this Saturday night, you can hear Dave and his band play. Who are the Mac All-Stars now? It's still Paul Kent?
Paul Kent, sure. Chris Breen plays keys and sings. Yep.
He's
Bob
good.
Bob Levitis plays guitar. Chris is a killer keyboard player. Yeah, yep. Yeah. He's a pleasure to play with.
Yeah.
He's a total pro. Yeah. Yep.
Now, here's the question. Is the music going to be on the DVD? That's what I want to know.
I hope so.
Okay. I'm sold. If I get a good concert track out of this, you know.
That's right. Yeah. Who else? Bob Levitis plays guitar.
Dr. Mac is great. Yep. Bob Levitis.
I've seen you guys play at Macworld before. Great.
Of course. Yeah, it's a fun, right. It's just a party band. It's fun.
No, it was fantastic.
And we try to be better each time. So this year we have two gigs, because we'll do this and then Cirque du Mac turns 11 this year at Macworld Expo. So we'll be doing Cirque du Mac there.
Wow. That's hard to believe. That's 11.
That one goes to 11.
Wow. Right?
More Spinal Tap jokes than you can shake a stick at.
Here are, if you want to know what Apple Casual looks like, here is the original Mac development team. In Apple Casual, and of course there's Steve on his knees with the Mac, directly behind Steve, Andy Hertzfeld.
I like the black sweater vest with a white t-shirt and jeans. I think everyone should just go as Steve.
1984 was...
You could see the transition from the bow tie to the mock turtleneck. that's probably my favorite step in the transition.
And there's a little baby there, too, who would now be 30 years old. Is that amazing?
We should find out who that baby is.
No kidding.
Somebody knows.
No kidding.
Somebody's scattered.
Way over on the right is that Bill Atkinson? Maybe not. I don't know. I'm trying to.
Now, Bill had a big afro back then, didn't he?
Which I'm looking for him. Andy's the only one I am. Yeah. Wow. Really fun to see that. So that'll be a great event. Is there any Mac news? I think we'll find some. We'll search. We'll look through the Mac news bag. There's big news.
Dig. We'll dig for it, Leo.
We'll dig.
It's somewhere.
Somewhere we'll find it. And when we do, we'll tell you. But first, a word from 99 Designs. You know, one of the things that Apple and Steve did with the Mac was and he talks about it, the intersection of, what do they call it, technology and the arts?
Right.
Engineering and liberal arts.
Yeah, he really brought design sense to something that had none. And I think ever since, we really could credit them with bringing the idea of design to the technical world. 99 Designs is the world's largest graphic design marketplace. Nowadays, if you're doing an app, especially if you're doing it for an Apple product, you better have some good design. Some great coding, but good design behind it. 99 Designs gets you your next graphic design, whether it's a new logo, a mobile app, a business card. It could be a T-shirt. We've had one of our best T-shirts was designed by 99 Designs. You'll find the right designer for your project at 99 Designs. More than 270,000 designers are sitting there. I have this image of them just waiting. Like, okay. And then you go and you say, I need this. And then they give you ideas. You work with the designers to refine the ideas. Pick your designer. Pay them the pre-negotiated price. And you're going to get great designs. It's fun to see the ideas roll in. You need fresh marketing collateral. All kinds of marketing design. There's no reason for anything you do to look ugly, I guess is the point. Whether it's a menu, a brochure, an email template, a banner ad, an infographic, they even do vehicle wrap designs. And they all start as low as $199. Visit 99designs.com/MBW. Get a $99 power pack of services free. That's 99designs.com/MBW. The power pack gives you more designer time and attention. They'll bold and highlight and feature your design project in the 99designs marketplace. You'll get nearly twice as many designs. 99designs.com/MBW. That power pack. Free. And we thank 99 Designs for giving, for making the world a prettier place and giving us a chance to talk about them. Look at Chad, you really did yeoman work today, pulling together all the big news stories.
Yeah, about that, Leo.
It's gotten to the point now where we're really going to start talking about Apple's patent filings. That's how bad it's gotten.
And, well, and it turns out that Apple's 5C screen repairs are now available at the Apple Store.
Some stuff happened
you
in
heard
China.
Maybe not first, but you heard.
Yeah, actually, this was the week that Apple entered the Chinese market, and it seems, according to some of the stories, now I wasn't there, but it seems that it was to a kind of a collective yawn.
Yeah, but a collective yawn in China is like.
But Tim Cook actually went. To be there for it.
He went to the Verizon launch, too, and that was a bit of a yawn until people had to start upgrading.
I think he just wanted to fly first class on Singapore Airlines.
Cathay Pacific.
So he went there. The lines weren't super long. I think they said there were 12 people. But this looks like a little bit bigger of a crowd than that. Part of it is, while this is the first time China Mobile, which is China's biggest carrier, has been selling iPhones. They have been on sale in China for a while.
And haven't they had some kind of minor riots early on.
Yeah, when they first came out.
Yeah.
And there's a ton of gray market iPhones on China Mobile already.
Yeah, exactly. China Unicom, China Telecom have been selling the 5S and 5C since September. China Mobile is the world's largest, not China's, but the world's largest carrier, 740 million subscribers. That's
a lot of people.
That's a lot of people. They're offering a 16 gig version of the 5S free, but you have to commit to it's just like the US, 2 years, and the monthly plan is $97 a month. But that's actually a pretty good deal. That's a better deal, I think. There's nobody in the States offering it for free. Anybody in Canada offering it for free with a 2 year contract?
We're working our way towards 2 year contracts from the old 3 year.
Oh, you have 3 years. That's right.
We used to. They're bringing them towards 2 years. Yeah. And it'll once in a while go down to free for special promotions and things, but usually it's not like when it comes out or for a while after it's come out.
If you sign up for the less expensive data plan, $31 a month, it will cost $625 with a 2 year commitment. Out of contract, the iPhone 5S 16 gig, $873. The equivalent thereof, 5,288 yuan. China Unicom's a little more expensive, $898 with no contract. China Telecom has probably the best deal, 5S free if you have a 2 year deal with a monthly cost of $64. So it seems like maybe the China Mobile deal isn't the best deal. Bloomberg reported that China Mobile had already hit 1 million pre-orders. Maybe China Mobile's... I don't know if the other ones are 4G.
It's such a different market.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's also, I think, going to be an interesting window into buying habits, like how normal humans like react to the iPhone. This is a phone... This is probably the only major country that was completely shut out of the iPhone for the entire multi-touch touchscreen revolution. So they essentially, in terms of phones they could get without any hullabaloo, these are all like Android devices and other non-Apple devices. So it'll be interesting to see whether these are going to be accepted as a yawn if this population is going to say, well, we've seen this before. It's nice, but it's not necessarily anything new or anything special. We'll stick with what we have right now. Or whether this will be really accepted as the fresh look at multi-touch mobile operating systems that was before. Now that they've been completely shut out before, but this is the first time it's really, really widely available that way. So
it's,
According to the Wall Street Journal's China real-time report, their completely unscientific comparison of mobile internet services using a 5S in China did show China Mobile to be the fastest, faster even than AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile in the U.S., with upload speeds of a little more than, about 3 megabits and download speeds of 15 megabits. It's pretty good. I'd take
it. Did I tell you what the LTE speeds are in Rwanda?
What?
106 down.
What?
98 up. Of course, I think there's only a couple of us on the network. But we opened up the phone. So Korea Telecom is installing it right now. And so it's all through Kigali. It's not being used yet. So they opened up the phone for the show I was in. And it was like, we turned it on. And I was like, that's the Wi-Fi speed. He's like, no, here's the Wi-Fi speed. And it was much slower.
You know, there's a reason that there's the obvious reason why China is important to Apple and every other U.S. and tech company in the world is because there's a billion consumers there. But there's a second reason, which I thought was quite interesting. We had a guy on yesterday, Larry Downs, who wrote a book called Big Bang Disruption on triangulation. And he said the other reason is because if you're a big company right now, one of the most important things you're doing is looking for where the disruptions are going to come from. What new industries, what new applications, where the hot stuff is happening. He said it used to be you could look to Silicon Valley and maybe Silicon Alley in New York, maybe Austin. He says now China, Russia, there's countries where stuff is happening that's potentially completely disruptive to your business. And if you're not there and not paying attention to those markets, you're going to miss it. Yep. So there's a strategic reason that it goes beyond pure money to be in China. You've got to pay attention to innovation that's happening.
Well, when you have that many people that could go one direction or another, I think that you know, suddenly you were big and suddenly you're a very small part of the market very quickly. And that's whether it's China or India or Africa as a whole. And a lot of these these groups, I mean, I spend a lot of time in the emerging world, all over the world, and you see a lot of them, they're not going to take the same path that the United States took. You know, they're taking slower paths or faster paths, but they're all – and you really do have to pay attention to it because it can move very quickly.
One of the things that's interesting, too, is, for example, number portability is not very high in China. And people who got on the network early have specific numbers they don't want to lose because it's a sign of affluence that you got an early number. Or if you have a lot of eights in your number, it's very auspicious and they want to make sure they keep those kinds of numbers. And then you have the App Store market. Amazon is not going to get a retail presence in China, probably not for a long time, if ever. Google Android devices don't often have Google services. They're typically completely different kinds of Android devices. Even when they did the jailbreak for iOS 7, part of that initially was the installation of a different app store that had paid reportedly a lot of money to get into the jailbreak because app store was such an important thing in China. So there's a whole secondary economy that we don't really see in North America that's working there. And if Apple can boost their retail and they can get their platform, specifically the app store, in there, it becomes a huge advantage to them that, you know, it's not as easy for their competitors to compete there.
Forrester Research asks 7,500 U.S. consumers, this is the third year they've done this, about big tech companies. Three questions. How enjoyable were they to do business with? How easy were they to do business with? And how effective were they at meeting your needs? You'd think that Apple would be number one here. Nope. Not even close. Amazon scored highest among the 17 consumer electronics manufacturers operating in North America. The only manufacturer to get an excellent rating of 91 for Kindle customers. Sony, I don't believe this. This actually means this study is wrong. It's just wrong. Yeah. Sony came in second with a rating of 83.
It's wrong.
Who likes Sony customers? Who would say Sony, number one, when it comes to doing business with, easy to do business, effective?
Howard Stringer.
where did they find these people?
This immediately makes me want to throw this out. Maybe Sony paid for it. I don't know. Microsoft and Samsung came in fourth, tied for third with scores of 82. Then Apple at 81. So according to this Forrester study, Amazon, Microsoft, Samsung, and Sony all have better customer experiences than Apple. Now, I know this is a Mac break. This is an Apple show, and we're all Apple partisans. But that doesn't sound right.
No. Well, so I think the Amazon one makes sense because they have that little video support that's built in.
I understand,
right?
Amazon.
So Amazon makes sense. I think that having Apple near the bottom of those, I don't quite understand. I mean, when you walk into an Apple,
Well, okay, let me be clear, though. Forrester says any score between 76 and 85, which Apple's well in that, is considered good. Mm-hmm. But it is a dropping over the 3 years they've done this survey. Apple, you know, is actually everybody's dropping a little bit. Amazon, Amazon dropped and then came back. Apple has always been kind of in the middle of the pack. It was number two in the first year and the second year, number five for the first time.
And what's the margin of error?
A lot.
Plus or minus 100%.
I mean, because it looks like that. My guess is that all of those are in the margin of error.
7,500 is a large number, though, right?
It is a large number, but they post that.
Yeah.
I guess maybe not.
Was it an enterprise survey, maybe?
No, consumers. U.S. consumers.
Was it generic consumers or people that had had repairs done? How did they qualify these people?
It just says they were consumers is all it says.
Okay.
I mean, 7,500 is probably, the margin of error is probably pretty low. I mean, 1 or 2%.
I would agree that Amazon probably does.
No, that little video support built into the
Mayday thing is pretty cool.
That's a cool feature.
You know, and it's something Apple, I've heard friends and listeners say, oh, Apple will get that next. It's like, no way. Amazon is set up to get that, right? You know, for years, you could go online. You can still do this right now. Click, I have a problem with my order. Click chat. Your phone rings and you're talking to somebody.
Yeah.
So they already have that infrastructure.
I had a crack in my toilet and I've been on the line with Jerry for, you know, like constantly. This is actually an interesting story. We bought one of those Toto wash your butt.
Yeah.
Wash everything.
How do you like that?
Then air dry it.
How's that working for you?
Like
how's that working for you?
Love it. Actually, Alex was the one who said, get it.
Awesome.
And it takes a turn that quickly, listeners.
No. I'm talking about customer experience. Okay.
Okay, please. Well, okay.
Let me tell you, the customer experience is excellent.
Okay. And it works fine. We installed it, and then we had a very good installer install it. And it is complicated because you have to install power. And
I installed it by myself.
You did, really?
Yeah.
You had a plug next to your toilet.
I had someone add a plug. That was it.
That's the critical one, of course. And then it's just like installing a toilet.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, but you don't worry about having power that close to everything else you're doing in that department?
No.
Had to ask.
No.
It's a GFI, you know, ground fault.
100 million Japanese are using these. So, you know,
yeah, they don't. Right, that's the electrocution rate has dropped considerably in Japan.
Exactly. It's just like
being a drummer, I worry about sitting on something and exploding. So
Jerry, so there's a really kind of a small crack, but it's a crack in the plastic part of the top. And the vent, you know, that's there falls out because it's cracked. So we put, you know, you go to Amazon and you say, there's a crack. Jerry's on the line like this, just like you said. Yeah. This is Jerry, not from Amazon. It was like Amazon Marketplace. It was a third party, but it's through Amazon. And
no one wants a bad rating.
Well, that's right.
Yeah, that's the whole thing.
He said,
you
put it on Amazon. And yeah, well, I got to help you here. He says, the only crack in that toilet should be yours. Okay. So he says, I've been on the line with Japan all morning. Wow. He says, Toto says this has never happened before. Can you send me a picture? So yesterday he says, we got a big conference call with all the Toto executives in the morning. It's going on right now. In the morning. And can you send me a picture?
of the toilet seat.
Gosh, I wish I'd. Anyway, no. But my point being, that's how Amazon gets so high on there. That
right?
Damn. And he wasn't even Amazon; he was an Amazon Marketplace.
But everybody, I mean, you get all those requests for ratings of how did we do, and it puts a lot of pressure on people because you know I look at those, I go, oh, it's got bad. The product's got bad ratings, or the service got bad ratings from
those
that,
reviews
that marketplace.
Are brilliant. Yeah.
And you just go, I'm not going to, you know.
Yep.
Yeah, it's
it really
brutal.
Is effective. So, but what is Apple? I don't think you could say Apple's done anything wrong to lower their score.
It's
they
still
are
a very high score.
That's the point.
Yeah.
I would say they're enjoyable to do business with. Is anybody can
awesome?
Unless you want to do anything that they don't agree to.
Well, there's that.
Even but I mean, like, you can call Apple customer relations, and oftentimes
they're very
they'll
good.
Take care of you.
Yeah, they're very good.
Yeah.
And then, how easy were they to do business with? I think Apple's pretty easy, unless you're the music industry or the cellular business. I would, you know, you wouldn't ask AT&T CEO how effective were they at meeting your needs. I think, anyway, it's still a good score. I have no idea how Sony got in that at all.
Maybe the antitrust monitor filled out the survey.
is this U.S. consumers?
Yeah, U.S. consumers, 7,500 U.S.
And they're all in Seattle.
The Sony experience sucks. There's no one to call. I don't know how you could say the Sony experience is good.
I'm wondering if part of it isn't the fact that Apple is unique in that that's the price that the list price is the price you're going to pay.
that's it.
Yes, there's no negotiation.
There isn't that much flexibility on a range of things that you want. So maybe that's digging it a little bit. But I agree that anything that puts that big of a swing on the company that you would expect to be higher is way low. The company you expect to be way low is way high. I wouldn't say that it's a fraudulent survey, but I think that tells you something about the sort of questions that they're asking and the sort of people who are responding to them.
Yeah. We're talking about Apple. Actually, there is, as I look through the lineup, Chad has done a good job of finding stuff. We're going to talk about Apple's FTC disconsent decree, which happened this week. More about the Apple lawsuit with Samsung. Apple's playing hardball on this one. I guess when you win, you can. And iOS 7 fixes, perhaps, imminent. You're watching Mac Break Weekly. Andy Inoko from the Chicago Sun-Times. Dave Hamilton, our first time. I can't believe it's... You've never been on this show?
Not that I know of.
That's... You were sleeping last night.
That's right.
That's this horrible oversight, Dave, which we will make sure is fixed. From Mac Observer and the Mac Observer podcast, which is called Mac Geek Gab. What's the difference in Mac Geek Gab? Do you have trouble saying it?
I do. I mean, I've learned to say it over the years, but I came up with the name. Actually, my wife came up with the name hours before we recorded our first episode, and I stumbled with it for a little while.
Mac Geek Gab.
It's a shibboleth. Yeah. That's how you know that people are real fans of the show.
If they can say it
correctly.
That's right.
They are at episode 484, just to give you an idea.
Yeah.
That's a lot of gabbing.
Almost 9 years ago.
You actually predate podcasting.
We don't predate the term podcasting.
All right.
We put out our first episode 3 weeks before they released the iTunes podcast directory.
Okay. So that's, you're right in there, though. You're a pioneer.
Yeah. Oh, I had to email Steve to make sure we were in the directory.
Did you really?
Yeah. You know how it is dealing with Apple, right? We have friends at Apple, as we all do. And I had asked my friends, because Steve had announced it 3 or 4 weeks prior.
Mocking it, by the way, saying podcasts or what he made fun
of.
Yeah,
right. But so I called my friends and I said, look, we just started this show. I want to make sure it's in the directory on day one. Can you put me in touch with whoever's managing the directory so I can pitch him effectively? And everybody's like, oh, you know, I don't know. It's not me and I can't introduce you. So I emailed Steve. And within 20 minutes, I was in touch with the folks and it was all good. So
wow. Wow. Well, congratulations on episode 480. Are you going to do anything for the 500th?
Oh, I'm sure we will. Yeah. We got a little while, though. We only do one a week, so,
you know. 15 weeks. You got some time.
Yeah.
You can find it at MacGeekGab.com. What's the difference between premium and regular?
Years ago, we started what we called our premium offering, and really it's a way for our listeners to support us
directly.
And we followed a bit of what I'll call the NPR model, where when people hit a certain threshold, we return the favor with a gift back to them. We did these cool water bottles that I don't have in front of me here because I'm not smart enough, but you know, it was good. Yeah, it's great. We have awesome listeners.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Also here, Mr. Alex Lindsay visiting from visiting
Petaluma. Yeah, exactly.
Visiting from the east. He makes his home here, but he doesn't live here.
We should stop saying he's back from Rwanda. He's never back from anywhere. No,
he's back is the wrong
I'm visiting.
Word. That's what I. Yeah, that's what I'm
visiting
saying.
Kind of everywhere. Yeah, he's so it's one of those things. So.
And ReneeRichieEyeMore.com. I saw your State of the EyeMore post this week. What's coming up with EyeMore.com? You've been on a tear. 2013 was a big year for you.
It was huge. We were lucky enough to double our readership again, which is,
double your readership? Is that what you said?
We've been doing that almost every year since we launched. We've been doubling our readership, which is kind of crazy when you think about it.
Nice.
But it's a huge responsibility. We want to really make sure that this year we're trying more than ever to, do what the reader, give stuff that's real value and real quality to our readers. So we're doing we want a lot of feedback from them to see what they want to see.
That's a novel idea. Well, instead of trying to generate clicks, let's give something of value.
Here's the thing, my boss.
What?
I don't want to tell you how to run your business, Renee, but you've been neglecting that for 3 years, and you've doubled readership every single year. It's possible that accuracy and value is not what your readers want.
No, so
and on that note, do you consider
we're doubling down
for as an associate editor position? I've been humiliating and dissatisfying readers since 1990.
I'm going to try to follow that. No, I'm lucky in that, like, my boss has never once asked me about clicks. It's not even on his radar. He just wants to make sure the readers are really happy and that we're providing a service to them. But as you guys know, it's such a diverse readership now, because there's the traditional geeks, there's all the mainstream people, there's people who want Mac stuff, who want iOS stuff, who use iOS on Windows. It's really diverse, and it's hard to meet the needs of all of them. So we're trying to figure out better and more delightful ways to do that.
Yeah, that is the challenge, is the growing fragmentation of the audience.
Candy. That's the key.
I can't. It's trademarked.
You can't. You can't. Right. You can't share candy.
I put that in the show notes. Candy Crush King has trademarked the term Candy Crush, and they're sending out letters to everybody.
Oh, but now you can use the word candy, can't you?
Well, I put it. I just added.
All right, we'll check it out when we come back. We're gonna take a break. Our show today brought to you by FreshBooks. There is no candy, but there is a cake.
Ooh.
So maybe that.
You know, hey, I've had that cake.
It's a good cake.
We had someone in our office actually won the cake.
Isn't it great?
Yeah, it was very good.
What are we talking about? Okay. So FreshBooks
right, listeners.
Is a cloud accounting solution for small businesses and entrepreneurs that you are going to love. I used it for years. In fact, until I had a staff, it is like having a staff. I was using, as many still do, Word and Excel to create my invoices. I had a shoebox of receipts to track expenses. Amber MacArthur back in 2000, I think it was 2005, told me about this little company, this startup called FreshBooks. And I started using it to send invoices. Now you can manage expenses. You can track time. It does everything you need to do. And you get paid faster with FreshBooks. You can easily create invoices online. That's a good start. I mean, the fact that you just can, boom, create those invoices means you'll do it. It's not such a chore, which means you will get paid faster, because I just never created them. I'd wait for months to invoice people. You can capture and track expenses on the go. You can get real-time business reports with a few simple clicks. And FreshBooks is free for the first 30 days, so go to getfreshbooks.com. And every day, they give away a birthday cake. This is the cake. For somebody who listens to Mac Break Weekly and signs up.
And we've had the cake.
And it's not just any old cake. It's a great cake. For your chance to win, you need to say Mac Break Weekly in the How Did You Hear About Us section. I'm sure you would do that anyway. GetFreshBooks.com. Every day could be your birthday with FreshBooks. Try it free for 30 days. Everybody wins. GetFreshBooks.com. It was such a lifesaver for me. I love them. And I still have, you know, this kind of soft spot in my heart. It's one of those companies where they just I would rank them 100 on the scale for customer service and just doing a job that you need. GetFreshBooks.com. If you do invoicing or keep track of hours, you got to get this, or expenses. So tell us, Mr. Rene Ritchie, about, well, actually, there's a number of stories on iMore I want to talk about, but you just mentioned what was it you just mentioned?
Yeah, Candy Crush is one of the most popular games on iOS. Some people love it. Some people believe it's the closest thing to casino gambling.
I think it should be illegal.
It's a whale model, so they count on, you know, some people spending up to $1,000 a weekend on this game to generate the massive amounts of revenue that they get. So it, you know, some people find that highly distasteful. Some people just want to play more and more of it. But they've now trademarked the word candy as it pertains to games and clothing.
Wait,
in some senses.
You mean I can't make a game with the word candy in the title?
They've sent out some desist letter. Like, they've had the App Store send out some infringement letters. There was a guy who did a Candy Casino game that got one of them. And it's interesting because, you know, for example, Apple owns a trademark to Apple, and Apple's a very common word, too. So can other computer companies use Apple? You know, that the trademark law is very nebulous to me. But they're arguing that there's some apps that are fine and they won't bother, but there are other apps that they think try to make themselves look like part of the Candy Crush.
That's legitimate. I don't blame them. You know, if that, and I think you would win in court if you said, look, see, Your Honor. But if, well, okay, here's one example. Benny Hsu, who makes a game called All Candy Casino Slots. Actually, the title of the game is All Candy Casino Slots, Jewel Craze Connect, Big Blast Mania Land. Okay, that is
Master
spamming.
Search engine optimization.
Yes.
He went for the 2-day seminar at the Holiday Inn Express, not the 1-day seminar.
And there is candy. If you look at the game, there is candy in the game. It's a slots game where you have candy in it. I don't know.
And his icon says candy slots, which is what they took issue with, was the candy in the icon and the prominence of the word candy in the
app. So Apple was...
Apple has this mechanism where you can contact them as a rights holder and say that this app infringes, and then they'll contact the person who makes that app. But then it's up to you. Apple doesn't want to get involved in the process. So once that happens, it's up to you to sort it out with the other party. And it's sometimes it's good because there's tons of Temple Run clones. And sometimes it's bad because there have been games like Stone Loops that got pulled off the store because looks kept saying they infringed, even though, you know, most people probably think they wouldn't. But it's going to be a big problem because I believe memory now has also been trademarked. So people with the word memory in their games are, you know, sometimes having problems.
So let's see what else Benjamin Shu has done. Maybe he's...
The question is, like, are they all that way?
Is he make a habit of this, yeah. In other words? Yeah. Well...
That's a whole business model in itself.
It is, and in fact, you know, I play Clash of Clans, which is a great game, but if you look, there's like 800 games with exactly the same model,
right.
And that's because Supercell, I don't know if even they were the first, but Supercell makes $2.4 million a day in in-app purchases. So these are his others, classic slots, candies. So what he had a slots game, which he has branded in a variety of different ways, and candy slots was one of them.
Probably in hopes that people who were predisposed to like the candy genre would land upon it.
Well, and you know, part of this is Apple's fault because their search is so bad iTunes. I'm sure people just type candy. And, look at all the iPhone apps that look like Candy Crush. Candy Crush Saga, Candy Blast Mania, Candy Maker, Cotton Candy, Farm Horse? No, that's not. Okay, well, it goes away quickly. And I'm not going to download Pimple Popper Lite because that doesn't look like fun. But, you know, there are a lot of...
The pro version is good.
Depends on who you are.
You're pro. Pimple Pusher Pepper Bow. Candy Shoot. Here's an example. And I'm not going after you guys particularly, but I don't know. Did this predate... If this came out before Candy Crush Saga, then you'd say, well...
Is that a Lux clone? Some games aren't even real games. They'll just have the wrappers, like it'll be a Minecraft looking game and you'll open them up and there'll be nothing inside them. So, I mean, there is a legitimate sort of knockoff problem on the apps.
Dem90 asks, yeah, in our chat room, why is iTunes search so crappy?
Because.
What's the story, man?
I have no idea.
I think it's just low on the priority list.
But they bought Chomp.
Yeah.
That's an app recommendation engine in theory would make it a bit.
It's so bad that if you're Twitterific and you update to Twitterific 5, you'll no longer be a high level search rank for that. I mean, it drops you all. It is broken. And so this is why I want Apple to buy whatever the services equivalent of Nest is or Next.
Yes.
Or any one of those companies.
Yes. Hey, did Apple miss a bet by not buying Nest? Did we talk about this last week?
I think we did.
Okay, yeah. Never mind. Forget
the
I said.
The answer is yes.
I have no memory. also on iMore, big story, Apple has at least temporarily gotten Michael Bromwich off the case. He is the court-appointed antitrust monitor that Apple says is horrible and doesn't know what he's doing and he's charging too much. And I think probably his worst sin, he's subpoenaed everybody from Tim Cook to Johnny Ive, even though they don't really have anything to do with the e-books case that he's there. Apple's been fighting to remove him. They said, according to Reuters, Apple's complained that Bromwich has been too intrusive, including seeking interviews with top executives and board members, and has been charging an inflated $1,100 an hour. For his
the
services.
Worst part is that he has no specific knowledge of the industry for which he is supposed to monitor, so he had to hire an outside counsel at his own rate to do the actual work he was supposed to do.
There's a word for this. It's called nepotism.
Well, because apparently Jennifer Cote, who's the judge of record on this case, is friends.
Nepotism.
With Michael. So what is the reprieve?
He's off their backs while they file the appeal, I believe.
Okay.
Which will last a long time.
Yeah. So, Michael, give us your card key, and we'll let you know when you can come back in. Apple also in court agreeing to an FTC consent decree over in-app purchases. I'm mixed feelings about this. Having spent considerable amount of money on kids' in-app purchases on my account... the issue, of course, is that Apple didn't soon enough, they do it now, prevent children from buying currency or points inside apps and games. It's too easy in an app or a game, and I agree with this, to not understand you're spending real money.
One of the guys in our office had his 3-year-old daughter spent $450 in like an hour and a half.
It's really easy. What was that fishing game where
that was the one.
You buy fish.
Aquarium game, yeah.
Yeah.
Essentially, if you want your fish to live, keep coughing it up.
That's right.
There were different objections to this from the interesting to the crazy. And Apple said that it was double dipping because they'd already settled the case in court. Some people also felt that, it was suggested that because the person who now heads the FTC used to work for the law firm that represented Samsung and Google and was actually charged with spilling the secrets to Nokia about Apple, to Samsung over Apple's Nokia settlement, that maybe that wasn't the best of, images to portray. And another one was that Google's policies are actually laxer than Apple's, but the FTC went after Apple and not the industry at large, which is probably just because Apple did an app purchase so many years before anybody else and probably got complaints for years before.
Yeah, because I remember last year getting from Apple a $5 gift card.
Right. What is this for?
This was their original settlement. So the FTC, this is like a fine now? Is this like
They're saying that if Apple doesn't pay up to $35 million, they're saying $34 million is the least amount of money that Apple has to pay. So if people don't claim
that instead of the $5 card, they have to do full refunds.
And also, if people don't claim that money, that it'll go to the FTC.
So get your money now, kids. So Tim Cook sent out an all-hands memo to employees on the 15th. Of course, Recode got it. That was Kara Swisher and company, very good at getting these internal memos, saying, quote, "It doesn't feel right for the FTC to sue over a case of that had already been settled. To us, it smacked of double jeopardy." The FTC responded by saying it feels its decree better serves consumers who, and this is the key, unwittingly racked up massive in-app charges because it requires full refunds. I have to say, the $5 gift card did feel like I'd spent a little more. The kids involved had spent a little more than that. And I could tell you, even a 10-year-old doesn't really understand there's money, real money there. What do you do with your kids, Alex?
I don't let them log in. I mean, I don't.
Well,
log
that's the thing. You turn off in-app purchases, and you don't give them the password.
Yeah, it's just
Apple solved that,
right?
But I guess this goes back.
Our kids have access to it, and they know they always ask before they buy anything.
Yeah,
and they're pretty good about it.
Were there spankings involved getting them to that point?
No, but I do have a way of punishing the kids. They have iPhones, and they know they have me over a barrel that they have to keep their I want them to have a phone.
Yeah,
but at CES, we all saw the brick, and I can take their SIM card.
You have
it. Put it in this.
Yeah, we'll still have a phone, but it will be a brick phone.
Oh,
you will look like Michael Wallace in Wall Street, and you should make them slick their hair straight back and wear suspenders.
That's awesome. That's right. Now my needs are served when they have the brick.
Brilliant.
I think so.
Because I thought, I'll give them a smartphone. And then I'll have something to take away. You always want to give them something so you can punish them. And then I realized it punished me far worse than it punished them because I didn't know where they were.
You can't catch them, right?
Can't catch them.
Yeah, Mike.
Brilliant.
Thanks.
Does the brick phone have a Find My Brick Phone feature?
I doubt it. It doesn't have much. It does have a game. And it can also be used as a Bluetooth headset.
Which is, I think, their main purpose.
But
Did you buy that at CES, Dave? Where'd you get that?
No, I've actually had this since the summer.
So this isn't the Benetton that they were showing at CES.
It is. It's a Benetton thing. Yeah. But they, their marketing company is actually right here in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. So, so I worked with them a little bit on it. They totally missed the boat and that they didn't get it out before Black Friday. But that's good.
I would love that. I did buy, and they don't make it anymore. SparkFun made an old Western Electric dial phone that's a cell phone, and I do carry that around. It's got a battery and everything, but it only has a few hours battery life. So, and there's no snake game.
Are you concerned that the kids can still spell out boobies on the keypad?
there are worse things, Andy.
there really are.
I just don't even think I could do that with my 6-year-old son. I told him if he didn't get stuff off the I said I'm coming into your room, and if there's anything on the floor, if it isn't clean, I'm just going to throw it away. Like you have to clean it up, and he wasn't cleaning it up. And I said, okay, you have to start picking what I'm going to throw away because I gave him like 6 hours of deadlines, to do this. And, And my son looked at me and he picked up what I gave him for Christmas and said,
Daddy.
Let's start with this.
And I was like, oh, it only reminds me of you.
He was just like, he was like, check. And then
emotionally blackmailing on 11th grade.
And then I took it. And then I took it and I threw it away. And that's called checkmate.
You won, yeah,
but it was like, but it was painful.
It was a painful,
I was like,
win.
But it's like it was just one. I didn't throw it away. I put it in a thing. I'll bring it back out some other time. But anyway, but the point is that the, yeah, I don't think I could play that game with taking his phone. He would just do something else. It's very sad.
I want the Benetone.
It's a brilliant thing.
Yeah. That is so inspired. How old are your kids, Dave?
My kids are 12 and 14 now.
Oh, nothing more humiliating.
Oh,
for
yeah.
a 12 or 14 year old to have to carry that.
Awesome. Oh,
Especially my daughter who wears those jeans that, you know, don't really have pockets, so she can barely slip her iPhone in the back of them. I tell her, yeah.
I say it's all about attitude. It's all about attitude.
Yeah, you could pull that off.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's the picture.
That's awesome.
I loved him in Magnum PI.
I kind of do want one.
I really want one, and I want that mustache and the running suit.
That should come with it.
Is that members only?
That's what America. This looks like American Hustle. Have you seen that movie? That's American Hustle there.
I was going to say it looks like American Apparel. Any ad they've ever done.
Yeah.
It is making me feel slightly nauseous to look at it. So it could be an American Apparel ad.
I like the wallpaper too. The whole thing. If you're not watching on video, just go to Amazon.com and search for the Brick Bluetooth One Handset 2-Line Landline Telephone by Benetone. And then
you can find it at meetthebrick.com.
Meet the Brick. See, it's out of stock at Amazon.
Yeah, well, it's a popular item.
You've discovered a whole new way to torture children.
I know. My kids, listen, they're just like me. So like Alex said, it's a game of constant checkmate.
Yeah.
You got to be able to deliver.
I lost every time.
Services are watching.
My kids are spoiled rotten because I could never do any of that stuff. Right. I just go, okay, you win.
I have yet to brick them, but the threat is there.
Threat is there.
It's not a fair fight because you know that at some point they're going to make the decision whether to put you in the good nursing home.
That's
or
what
the
my
bad
son says.
See? That's
exactly what Henry said. He said, Dad, just remember, I'm going to be in charge of your nursing home. Kids are so smart about this kind of stuff. Even a 6-year-old.
It was six.
That was quite a move.
It was
okay, Dad.
I mean, I didn't start doing those moves until I was like 8. So
I guess he's a genius.
I don't know.
It's like Falcon Crest for your house, isn't it?
It's like, escalations.
Yeah, yeah. It was rough. It's comeuppance for me. I did that. My dad would usually back down, and then look at how I turned out. It's a big mess. So I have to.
No, I think that your dad did the right thing. Because you're creative. See, I think the most important thing you can do is to cultivate creativity in your kids.
My poor parents.
They could be complete jerks, but if they're creative, okay.
All my mom cared about is that we were obsessed, not bored. So she would, that was the only rule.
That's good. That's cultivated creativity.
So you just keep on feeding whatever obsessions
were. Look at Picasso, complete dick. But he was a great painter, right?
Are you calling me a...
No. No. No, you're not at Picasso level anyway. So the CEOs of Apple and Samsung met to try the behest of the court to try to settle. And actually, they're going to meet on or before February 19th. But apparently, Apple is going to insist on an anti-cloning provision. HTC has already agreed to this with Samsung that will allow Apple, even though there's a settlement and there's license agreements, Apple can still sue if Samsung's products are too close to Apple's products in ways that could be avoided by design arounds. Remember, Apple said you don't have to make a square tablet with squares. You could make it round.
Angle.
Angles. Triangle.
That would be awesome. In another dimension.
According to Foss Patents, this could be a deal breaker. Meaning they're going to have to go back to litigation if they can't. You know, they have to. The judge said, look, you guys sit down and hammer something out. But I wonder if Samsung would accept this this cloning provision.
Well, Apple's won most of these.
The Galaxy S5 is already rumored to come in both plastic and metal and to have a fingerprint sensor. I mean, this is big business.
It is. It is.
But also, yeah, considering the range of stuff that Samsung makes, could any company with that kind of a portfolio ever make a modern line without infringing? I would like to see how that language is applied. If HTC accepted it, then that means that it's possible to build a touchscreen phone that is relevant for 2014 without violating that agreement. But again, I would like to see how that is spelled out that gives Samsung the ability to use a technology like fingerprint sensors that did not premiere on the iPhone by any means and still not get sent back to the outhouse.
It could even be something simpler than a fingerprint reader. It could be things like pinch to zoom. Remember that that was those three touch patents that Apple won. And Samsung says, well, we want to be able to license those. And Apple says, no, not only can you not license them, you can't have multi-touch. Well, that's kind of...
I think it's fair to say that at the beginning, Samsung did everything they could to ride Apple's marketing wave by using similar iconography and design. But the current stuff is really quite different already, and it's almost like they're fighting a battle that's already progressed past where it was.
And from a point of view of consumers, and that's all I care about. I mean, you can argue that Apple got ripped off by Samsung and probably argue correctly. But from the point of view of consumers, it's not good for Apple to be the only multi-touch manufacturer, you know? The diversity of the ecosystem. Well, that's the question. It sounds like Apple's saying you can't even license this. You just can't do it.
Is that just a negotiation?
There are differences. Microsoft wants to make Android more expensive, and Apple wants to make it harder to use. So that's both their advantage. So for Microsoft, if you have to pay licensing money for Android, then they're competitive again because they charge licensing for Windows Mobile. Apple has no interest in licensing fees. They just want to make a crappier user experience on Android so that iPhone stays what they consider to be a premier experience.
Well, doesn't Microsoft make more money with their Android licensing than Windows Mobile?
They do. Yeah. But again, that's a different philosophy.
Right.
And also, I don't know how far Apple's going to get with that, considering that Google is now being more and more aggressive in the handset market. And if there's any, if there's an Ali versus Frazier on lawyers fighting against lawyers, that's going to be Apple versus Google. They never want to go toe-to-toe against each other. So I don't know how far they're going to get by claiming that they if they're going to continue to claim that they have basic patents on fundamental multi-touch operating UI. Although, if you roll back to the round one of these patent industries with Samsung, they were being very clear that this isn't about rounded corners. This really is about trying to recapture the entire spirit of a device. So like I said, that's why, especially as a guy who not only do I not have a law degree, in 11th grade I was being sent preemptive letters from the best law school saying we don't even consider sending, we just don't want to even open the letter from you asking to be a law student at our school. that's why the language is always so precise and expressing the intent. I agree, because there are two signature fears I have about Apple and Google. With Google, the signature fear is that anything that seems like a really great idea any great piece of news on the surface, this is going to result in Google having more of my personal information. That I'm sort of okay with it, but I become more and more worried the more information I give them. With Apple, it's the idea of they're going to have a exclusivity on more and more cool technologies, because the problem is that if Apple has it, they're going to articulate it very, very well, but it's going to be a very closed ecosystem situation, and there's not going to be a whole worldwide market of devices that can benefit from this. They're going to try to defend this patent very, 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 very tightly. So those are the signature fears that I have about each one of them. So that's why I'm hoping that Samsung will get punished for what was clearly, with the Galaxy S1 and 2, clearly let's make something that looks as much like the iPhone as possible while we try to figure out how to make something that's as good or better than the iPhone. They need to be punished for that. But the time that when it becomes harder for when the market for phones and tablet operating systems stops becoming let's create the best experience for the users possible and starts becoming let's create the best experience that will not cause us to get sued by Apple, that's when we start to question whether Apple's intentions are pro-user or not.
And part of the problem is patents are too long for technology. I mean, if I can't make a pinch-to-zoom device for 17 years, well, you might as well just say you can never make it.
Because there won't be any pinching by then. It'll just be thinking it.
It's also Apple, in many ways, is a very personal company. The personalities of the people involved are more important at Apple than they are at a lot of other companies. And Apple, rightly or wrongly, feels like they got sort of cheated out of the PC revolution from a partner of theirs, Microsoft. And now they feel like they partnered with Google for the iPhone and they partnered with Samsung for manufacturing. And they, in essence, taught these companies how to do modern smartphones. And these companies turned around and became their competitors. Now, there's lots of ways to disagree with that. But if that's how Apple feels, especially under Steve Jobs and, you know, not as much under Tim Cook, but it's carrying on, it's not hard to understand why they engage in these behaviors.
Well, yeah, and I think that the one of the issues is that in the early days, as we talked about earlier, you really couldn't tell from a distance. You couldn't tell the difference between the tablets, you know, and they were definitely drafting on that. But as you said before, I think that that's a is less of an issue. But I mean, obviously, Apple spends a lot of time on R&D. And, you know, I think that I have become much more sensitive to it. Our company now does hardware and software R&D. and, you know, we write a lot of our own software and we're building our own hardware. And I definitely have a different view of what it takes to do that. There's just an enormous amount of work. And so to come up with something and have somebody else, you know, we have to be very careful of just not talking about it. You know, we don't patent stuff. We just don't tell anyone how it works.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, that's the other side of it.
Yeah.
Well, the issue is you've got people out there. We know the difference. We pick up an Android phone and we know darn well it's not iOS and vice versa. And there are things that, you know, you could argue are good about one versus the other. You've got the general populace out there that thinks their Comcast DVR is TiVo. And, you know, it's even the TiVo DVR is not TiVo.
Don't you think people know the difference between an iPhone and an Android?
They know the difference, now they do. But they don't. They know that there is a difference. They don't know the difference. And so they pick up an Android phone.
It's more like they don't care.
Yeah,
don't
they, care. They pick up an Android phone and it's, say, oh, no, it's enough. The same as
just
an,
like
iPhone.
Yeah.
No
Facebook
way.
Facebook icon here.
But here's the main point. I mean, there is so many, just volumes and volumes of examples of, again, look at, here is this phone that Samsung and HTC and these other makers made before the iPhone came out. And here's what they made the year afterward. And so it's hard to deny both that and the actual paperwork evidence that demonstrates that these companies realized they were going to have to throw away what they were doing and do things that were more iPhone. Like, at the same time, though, but I'm sorry, this is the point that I wanted to make. At the same time, though, you can go from, let's say, 2009 onward and look at everything that was going on in Android before iOS 7 and now look at features that are very, very Android-like that turned up in iOS. It's the reason why you need to be very, very delicate and try to get that very, very thin scalpel that figures out the difference between theft of an idea and theft of intellectual property and simply the recognition that, okay, the way that we're doing this on the iPhone or the way that we're doing this on our Android phone or the way that we're doing this on our BlackBerry phone is not nearly as good as this example that we just bought last month ago. And if it means a better notification system for iOS users, if it means that a better sense of your path through an application than for users, and if it means that, you know, God forbid you accuse Apple of, quote, stealing something from TouchWiz, but the idea of simply swiping a direction from the top or bottom, now getting a panel of here's how you can turn off and on your Wi-Fi and your Bluetooth and things very, very quickly. If that benefits users, I think that we want to have a very, very, very strict definition of what got stolen and the proof that this was a theft of intellectual property. And we want a proof that this is not just simply a case of someone who came up with a great idea that was discoverable by other companies just getting there and patenting it first. Because, again, that's what leads to 8 years from now, an industry in which there are two makers of really good phones that are different from each other, and then everyone else has to make the brick phone because that's the only one that's legally until somebody patents the numbers 1 through 4, and then another company has patents the number 5 through 0 on the keypad, and now you can't even have the brick phone anymore.
Well, let's talk about sales numbers, because I think that these numbers are, it's always so hard to assess these. So that's why we have you experts here. Apple says they sold 55 million iPhones last quarter. That's up 16%. 55.3 million iPhones. Or maybe it's analysts. It's not Apple. Apple's not saying.
Apple's not reporting until next week.
Right. Will they say a number, though, next week?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, historically, they have always said a number.
Okay. NPD, another analyst group, always take those with a grain of salt, says Apple got 42% of the U.S. smartphone share in 2013 in Q4. Samsung only 26%, and then HTC, Motorola, and BlackBerry down in the fourth quarter. But this is an NPD report.
And the problem is it's not segmented. The smartphone market is going to become the phone market, and the phone market is so large that it's irrelevant, you know, what the share is. It's more what's the share under $200 phones? What's the share over $600 phones? Those kinds of things are going to be much more important. It happens in the car industry, the watch industry. But for some reason, consumer technology always lags behind in quality analysis of this kind of stuff.
Fortune did a really nice chart. So Monday, Apple's going to announce its numbers. We'll know by next Mac Break Weekly, and we can compare this to the guesses. Fortune did a chart of all the estimates. Look at all of these. And so the average is 55.3 million, but it goes as high as 59.7 million from the Braeburn Group and as low as 50 million from the Braeburn Group. Two different analysts, same group. So it's a, you know, we'll say over 50 million.
It'll be a big number.
Yeah. Pretty. So the point being, at least in the U.S., and I think we have to say maybe only in the U.S., the iPhone is still totally dominant, right?
Yeah.
Again, it's the number. So if you look internationally, phones that are cost over $600, Apple has a huge market share of them. Phones that cost under $400, Apple has a 0% market share.
Because Apple doesn't have any.
Yeah. And this kind of stuff is typically not factored into these kinds of things. And it's really important information for every industry to have.
Right. Except Apple doesn't care. We've talked about that. Apple doesn't even want that market.
No. They didn't want it for Macs for a long time either. No. Yeah, they didn't want to make a netbook.
They did want it for iPods, though, didn't they? They really ate up all the oxygen on iPods.
They did, and they did it, you know, kind of systematically and slowly. You know,
Why aren't they doing that with the iPhone?
Because I bet you it's really hard to make a cheap iPhone the spec that they make it at.
You can't make an iPhone shuffle. A screenless
iPhone.
Who am I calling? It doesn't matter. You're calling the next person.
Yeah, exactly.
Remember the buttonless shuffle? That was amazing.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I think that's hard. I mean, I think with a lot of the stuff, Apple gets into these you know, specific things. I think we've talked about it earlier, but like these trackpads. I heard that the failure rate was like 40% when they started shipping. And so a lot of times things going out slow is not just because it takes a long time. It's because they're getting a lot of rejections. And the thing's just not meeting those criteria. And so I think that's the issue.
Yeah. Version 7.1 beta 4 is out, came out yesterday, iOS 7. Look, I know every time I talk about this, somebody says, no, I have had no problems with iOS 7 on my iPad or my iPhone. They're not. I believe them. But you saw it here, right here. This is virtually a stock iPhone 5S.
And it just restarted while we were on the show. Or was it before
Even touching it.
It just went.
And it restarted. And it wasn't a springboard restart. It was a reboot. Yeah. So, I got to think it's iOS 7. It could be the iPhone itself.
Are you on 7.1, Leo, or on 7.0?
I'm on, you know, whatever, 7.04, whatever they officially ship. So, are you on 7.1? Can you admit it if you are?
I tend to try the beta so that I can write about them with you know, some degree of knowledge when they actually ship.
Okay, so will 7.1 be a relief?
I think people will be really happy with 7.1. I hope Apple puts it out soon. If not, I hope they put out a 7.0.5 soon, because resprings are not good. I mean, I don't have a single device that's perfect. All of my devices have their quirks, their flaws, their problems, their glitches. They all require updates periodically. But iOS 7 is incredibly popular. Hundreds of millions of people use it, and resprings is not something you want people to see with any frequency, you know, much less crashes. So
yeah.
Do you have the issue where you're trying to answer the phone and it's not responding to your finger?
I love that.
I've had that since iOS 2. You're just like, that since iOS 2.
Dave loves that one.
That's your phone saying, yeah, you don't want to talk to your mom right now.
No.
It's not a good idea.
No.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's particularly problematic because people aren't used to having these problems.
Yes.
I mean, iOS 7, I don't think it's been a disaster by any definition, but it's the first one where I've noticed that, I'm having a problem with this a lot. I'm having the same sort of issue with Mavericks, in that this is the first one in which I'm having recurrent bugs that are so annoying that it is really harshing my mellow, so to speak.
Oh, man.
It's been a long time since iOS or macOS has done that sort of stuff to me. So hopefully it's going to be addressed really, really quickly.
One of the things is a 64-bit is apparently having memory. Like it's running out of memory faster than people anticipated. So one of the updates they're going to do is for the 64-bit memory. And the iPads also are still 1 gig of memory was probably not the best of choices for the new iPads. Hopefully the new ones will have more than that.
A bad choice for a 64-bit OS and 64.
Well, 64-bit, just the memory management doesn't seem to be as good. They seem to run out of memory faster on the 64-bit versions because the things are bigger that they're doing. But in general, I think the iPads would have benefited from more RAM.
Okay. Good. And do we see a Mavericks update in the offing?
They're in beta. I mean, they're always. I think whatever the next one is, 10.9.2 is already up for developers. So those will just chug along.
All right, crossing my fingers.
Yeah, maybe Mail will be fixed, but don't hold your breath.
Mail with Gmail is the big problem, right?
Yeah.
Oh man,
is it just Gmail?
For the most part, yes.
What's awesome?
And managing a large amount of mail with any IMAP account is very different in Mavericks than it used to be in Mountain Lion. Gmail sees it the worst because Gmail's IMAP implementation is a bolt-on at best for Gmail.
Right.
But, you know, even with it just any amount of mail, Mavericks just doesn't deal with large quantities of mail in any one mailbox as well. That's the big issue. And it doesn't make any sense to me because this was a solved problem in Mountain Lion.
They unsolved it.
They unsolved it. Yeah, it doesn't. I mean, I get what they were trying to do with Gmail in terms of dealing with all mail differently and all of that. And that was great. But I don't understand why that, by changing that, would break managing lots of mail simultaneously. But they succeeded in doing that for no good reason. So hopefully they'll undo that.
What I think is awesome in iOS is when you get your new mail, your new Gmail, and you open a message and it disappears while you're reading it. it gets moved to another folder, and you're like you're in the middle of it, and then just gone. And then you're like, okay, now I have to figure out what folder it decided to put it in. So.
Well, I had that problem, Alex, and it turned out that it was paying too much attention to Google's new mapping when Google started the social folder and the priority inbox, and it would move it around, and then mail would no longer see it and it would pull it out.
Yeah, it's been awesome.
Yeah, there's so much blame to go around on both sides there. Gmail's implementation is just kind of, it's great if you're staying, it really is designed to be operated through a web browser and a mail reader that Google absolutely controls. But that said, there are other mail readers that can do it with a lot more elegance than iOS. So, but there's definitely a lot of blame to split between between multiple parties here.
They're all wrong.
All right. Any other stories before we take a break and get to your picks of the week? Let me see here. Google Play Movies and TV and iOS. That's nice. I use Google Play Music on iOS. Very happy. Glad they did that.
I'm glad there's another multi-platform movie store available.
Yes.
Because I still think that if you're buying movies and TV shows directly from the iTunes store, that's not a long view play. That's going to be a problem. The more you buy, the more worried I get. The more I buy from the iTunes store with the iTunes DRM, because it's a great retail experience. It's great video. The hardware is great. But what happens 3 years from now when there is you bought this wonderful $250 NAS box that does a million things for you, and it will do things for you if you've got Amazon Video, it'll do things for you if you've got Google Play Video, but unfortunately you spent $400 on movies on the iTunes store and Apple doesn't want to play with you.
Interesting leak from 9to5 Mac. Apparently Adobe briefly showed a page for its Lightroom for iPad. You may remember last year we saw a video of a developer showing it on an iPad 2 for some reason. The idea that Lightroom for the iPad would be integrated with Lightroom on the desktop. You could make changes on the iPad. I would love this. It would read raw, for one thing, which nothing on the iPad does. And then you can make changes on the iPad, and it would automatically sync with Lightroom. Unfortunately, if this page is accurate, it's since been taken down on Adobe's site, they plan to charge $99 a year for Lightroom for the iPad. I guess it'd be a creative.
I think that's why they took it down. I mean,
you think it was a trial balloon? Like, let's see if anybody notices, and what would they say?
They'd say you're crazy. No, I think that the question is whether that's a $99 a year for only that application. They've got a lot of different cloud.
I pay $10 a year for, they had a photographer package of Lightroom plus Photoshop.
Right.
$10 a month, I should say. At $120 a year. And I thought that was a good deal.
Right. Because you had Photoshop.
If they would throw in Lightroom from the iPad on that, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Right. But that's not, I don't think, what they're saying.
I have the full Creative Cloud. It's fantastic because I use a lot of their apps. Yeah, but that's, for me, what, it's a much 30? Better deal than buying it.
30 a month?
Yeah, I got the discount because I had a license for the last version, so I forget exactly what the retail was, but it might have been 50 if you'd had no previous version. But it's still a great deal when you think about how much I was spending on all those apps individually over the years.
Well, yeah, and I don't mind because I get Photoshop. I don't mind $10 a month, Photoshop plus Lightroom. Yeah. I already paid for Lightroom, so that felt a little bad. But that's why I got the deal, I guess, is because I was a Lightroom and Photoshop licensee at one time.
It might be an interesting move because the more photographers I speak to, I've met more and more photographers who are moving from Aperture to Lightroom
because Aperture's not updated ever.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't work as well with the large libraries that they like to work with. But also, it's a vote of I can either start the pain process of transitioning now, or I can be forced to when I realize the writing is on the wall, or when they final cut 10 me.
And I'm in the process of leaving Aperture, and it's painful. But what happened was is I literally opened up Aperture, and I've been importing old iPhoto libraries. And when I went into it, there was a whole bunch of stuff that was just the previews, so it hadn't grabbed the full one. Now, fortunately, I got them all backed up and everything else, and now I have to go through and figure that out.
Pain point.
But I've got 200,000 photos, and a lot of them are all trying to go through there, and some of them are there, and some of them aren't, and some of them are somewhere else, and I used to think that it would be great to have Aperture just kind of manage the library because it's all in one big chunk and it's all there. And I just realized that it wasn't managing it very well. So, and I was trusting it too much.
Are there
and so
features now one of the big selling points of Aperture was the fairly recent merging of its database with iPhoto. So I can, but that's nice, but I still use Lightroom.
But I have to admit that this one issue that's with bringing those iPhoto ones in, because this is like pictures of my kids and all kinds of other stuff that now are like 600 by 300. Now, and again, I have it all. I tend to be a little bit of a pack rat, but it's going to, be weeks or months of slowly going through all of that to figure out where they all are.
Are there features that you're missing from Aperture when you move to Lightroom 5?
I don't think there's a lot of features. I mean, I think there's actually more features in Lightroom. I think that it was mostly that I liked it being organized, and I thought that it was pretty fast, and I liked it all being in one big pile that I could move around without having to manage that.
Photo
stream, yeah.
The photo stream's good, but I mean,
You can still do that. In fact, you probably want to do it in a more orderly way where you pick stuff in Lightroom, export it out, and import it into iPhoto, and now turn on Photo Stream. Rather than having all 200,000 photos on Photo Stream.
Well, I don't have it all 200,000, but funny, my wife always knows whatever I'm doing because my iPhones, my Apple TV at the house is synced to my iPhone's Photo Stream.
I like
that. And so when it plays up, she'll be like, why are there a bunch of pictures of field runners? I don't understand. I was like, because I was on level 400.
Save it.
It was supposed to be 60 levels. I was like, level 400. I'm going to take a picture of that.
The Lightroom for iPad will come with storage, because if you're moving raw files back and forth, they're probably going to have to do that online. And if they package a really large amount of storage with it, then maybe the price makes more sense.
You do get with it's Enhance, right? Is that the name of theirs?
Yeah. Behance.
Behance. That's terrible. Like Behance. Not Enhance, Behance.
Interesting though, because we're talking about moving our large photo media libraries out of Apple's ecosystem. Andy was just talking about don't keep your movies in Apple's ecosystem. And of course, iTunes works for music, but it's really slow when you have lots of music in there. So, I mean, does Apple have a problem long term with this? Yeah. This is not good.
I have to admit that I get a little since the Apple IIe, I've been a fan of Apple. I'm a happy user of Apple. I still rely on Apple for, I think, some of the best products that you can. I mean, there's nothing even comes close to an iPad, and there's nothing that comes close to a MacBook for me. But it makes me a little bit sad when I realize that they kind of ruined iTunes, and that's when I realized that I can move my. I'm going to use Google Music as my cloud storage for music, and it's going to work better. It makes me a little bit sad when I'm keep looking at it. I actually like the way that Aperture works. I don't like the workflow methodology of Lightroom. I like the idea that I can sit in, have a real multi-windowed, multi-toolbar app that lets me basically discover how to fix these photos in Aperture. But the more time I spend in Lightroom, the more I realize that, oh, man, there are two major hassles with Aperture, and they'd both be solved if I switched. And I mean, you're absolutely right. It breaks your heart that there's I won't speak in generalities. It breaks my heart that there are such big, important things about the computing experience that I know now no longer think that Apple does really, really well. Certainly not well enough that I want to use that as my resource.
And ecosystem lock-in is a huge selling point.
That's absolutely huge.
It doesn't. I mean, like for me, all of us, when we travel, I like to bring my iPad on the airplane and watch a movie. How difficult is it to get a movie from my library to my iPad when I'm sitting in a hotel room?
Right.
And the answer is not at all if I have a Plex server in my house and I, you know, I'm a Plex Pass member at whatever, $30 a year. I want that movie, and then I go to sleep, and in the morning it's on my iPad and I go, you know, to the airport and I'm good to go. That's impossible if I had everything in iTunes on my computer at home.
I felt like such a dope because I was using my Apple TV as my main like cool little hockey puck thing plugged into the TV for streaming video for months and years. I had the Roku 3 just sort of as a test device. It was attached so that a new app came in. Then Slingbox came up with their new app, which caused me to update the Roku for the first time in like 3 or 4 months. And now I'm almost never using the Apple TV because this is the first time I spent like a few days saying I'm going to do another deep dive into Roku, and that's when I realized that I didn't realize that they have a streaming that I can act. It's not built into Roku, but I can download an official Roku app for playing media files that are simply attached to USB. And I'm thinking that it'll just play this cool file that I just dropped onto a USB drive. But, it found every single DLNA-compliant media server on my network. And it's saying, you want whatever movie, whatever music, whatever you want, anywhere. It doesn't matter what library created it. We're happy to serve it for you. And now all these other third-party apps are on the Roku that aren't available on Apple TV. And the only thing I miss from Apple TV is the screensaver that feeds from my Flickr feed. Really, that's the only thing I miss about it.
When you've got your iPad and you want to, you know, you've got something from YouTube up and I want to show the kids, I can just, you know, boom, right on the TV.
It's almost as if the world is trying to collude against me and against my love of Apple TV, because that's exactly what I was thinking. Well, still, it's nice when you have the iPad or and the MacBook. And then Roku finally released their official YouTube app, and YouTube has that feature where if you have the Chromecast plugin installed, that's great. You can just simply tap a button within the YouTube player, and now you're streaming directly to the TV, and it takes over from the streaming from your iPad. It's like, that is better.
There's two kind of things that I try to remember with this stuff, too, though. First is if you're outside the U.S., almost no one but Apple still provides. Like, I just can't get Amazon movies. Google Play has movies. I've bought some. Whenever I try to watch them, it asks me to rent them from YouTube, even though I've already bought them. Mm. So the kind of thing, I don't think this is going to be solved until the DRM goes away, because horizontal or vertical lock-ins essentially are the same thing. And if you lived through Microsoft's music experience when they started shutting down services just because they played on a wide range of device, didn't help you from not being able to watch them on any of them. So I like Andy's idea. I like the idea that everything is just stored on the cloud. I think it works great for music now, because music you can take from your machine, put it on the cloud. Nothing's stopping you from music unless and until Hollywood agrees to get rid of the DRM. I think every solution is still kind of broken.
Well, and I think
I'll be completely honest. I'm very, very quickly. I'm sorry. I'll be very, very honest. I'm saying that I think that you shouldn't buy movies and TV through iTunes. But I think that the optimum is to not buy them digitally at all. If there's something that's worth keeping, I will buy it on DVD or Blu-ray and then rip it. I just don't want to buy it in a digital locked up format.
Yeah, I have to say, I think as a you know, with a family and people, everybody sharing everything. I think for me, I mean, I do buy a lot of movies on iTunes or on Apple TV or whatever. And my whole thing is that everybody can use them. I don't have to explain it. I don't have to, you know, it just works. I mean, I know that that's the marketing thing for Apple, but I mean, it's like everything just kind of works, and I don't have to explain to my wife how to make that work or my kids, and I can put anything on their iPad and I don't have to figure it out. And so I think that it just depends on how much effort you want to put into that. And so for me, that's not a priority.
Well, you can stream it's all, from iOS.
Like for us, okay, so for us it's not geeky, but for anybody else, I mean, Apple TV is like, I just go click and it works. And all the other ones, I mean, I put versions of all of these at some point in time, you know, in the house. And, you know, my wife just goes back to the Apple TV, you know, because she doesn't want to think about, you know, she takes one wrong turn and she doesn't want to do that anymore. You know, and so that's the issue is that none of them are as slick. And for us, I mean, if I was by myself, I'd probably do a lot of more geeking out and more complex solutions that that were more elegant in that way. But as a, you know, with my family or my parents, you know, I just want them to be able to turn it on and not call me.
What I'd really like is, you know, I would really like iTunes in the iCloud. The way I work is in iCloud now. I think it'd be great if Apple took whatever is still sitting on the crappy Windows version of iTunes and the Mac version, just put them up on the cloud. iOS can stream now. It didn't used to. It used to have to download. So I don't even bother downloading movies anymore. I just press the play button on iOS and it streams them. But to have all that web browser based, when theoretically you could access from any device then, I think that would, you know, it would kind of slow. It would remove some of Apple's lock-in, but it would save so many problems for so many people that I think it'd be worthwhile.
Yeah. What a good discussion! I don't even know how we got into it, but thank you,
Leo. I'm a little blown away that you're looking at Google Plus.
I was just trying to see if there was anything more to talk about that we have missed. I love Google. What are you talking about? I love Google Plus.
I thought you kept on saying that it was, you know.
No, I'm not. I like it. It's one of the reasons I like it.
Yeah.
It's because it's a great place to hang out with people who work at Google.
And who use Android phones, Leo.
They all use Android. It's great. Actually, Google Plus has become more and more dominant. The real thing I was looking for is Chris Marquardt's video workshop that he just put up, discoverlightroom.com, for people who are making the change to Lightroom.
Oh, I'm going to watch that.
Aperture. It's good. His pricing is interesting. So there's a... There's, I don't know how many, 6.5 hours of video, but you can choose your price. So just depending on how you use Lightroom, anywhere from $15 to $100.
And
you get to choose the price. Same workshop, different, anywhere from $15 to $100.
Okay, that's funny.
Most people are going to choose $15.
Yeah, I think.
But
so.
if you're a pro,
throw a little bit more at Chris and
yeah. Chris does great stuff.
He does. He's great.
And I know that moving to Lightroom is probably fairly painful. I love, but I have been using it for a long time.
I just have too many photos, and I wish I had done it earlier. That's my problem. So it's going to be like the 2014 project.
Just real quickly, Aperture, it's going to get an update, right?
I don't know.
We don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, they have Pro Tools teams working on it, so it should get an update.
Wouldn't bet on it, though.
The double fear, I do believe it'll get an update. The question is, what kind of update will it get?
Right.
I mean, will it still do the task that it was designed to do 3 or 4 years ago?
Right.
Because there are a great number of people who decided to build their businesses around the job that Aperture does.
So. Well, for those who want to make the move, this is probably a pretty good deal if you've ever owned Photoshop, at least Photoshop CS3 or later. This is the one I went for. They call it the Photoshop Photography Program. It's part of the Creative Cloud. You only get two programs, though, Lightroom 5 and Photoshop Creative Cloud version. But you also get 20 gigs of storage, a Behance Pro site, $10 a month when you sign up for the year plan. This is not an ad, just a mention. But, I haven't had Photoshop. The last Photoshop I bought was 6. And I thought, you know, I really probably should have Photoshop.
It's good. I think that Pixelmator is doing a lot better. I mean, I think it's...
But there's some good choices.
I think the problem is... I think if I was just getting into photo editing, I could probably use Pixelmator and be pretty happy with most of the stuff. I think the problem is that I've been using Photoshop since 2.
Right.
Version 2. And it's very hard for me to... Like, I go into Pixelmator and I just want to do certain things that I can't quite figure out how to do. But every update... There's a lot of things in Pixelmator that are a lot faster than Photoshop, so...
Really?
It's fascinating.
Because it's built on a modern architecture, and it's using the GPU properly. And the one thing about Photoshop is when you open it, I just know everything else on my computer is going to run a lot worse. So when Photoshop's open, you really got to use it, and then you got to shut it. Because
it runs great on that Mac Pro.
It does, doesn't it?
Sorry.
Yeah.
No, but everybody should try.
Can I play with a Mac Pro?
It's my house.
Oh, never mind.
I'll bring it in.
I want to do some 3D
stuff. It's
become
my desktop.
But now every time I was teaching a class this morning in Rwanda from my house, and we were talking about how to do flags, you know, how to do 3D flags, and
how much would you pay to borrow it?
It was going very slow. Yeah, it was going very slow, and I was like, all I could think of in the back of my head was, I wonder how fast this would be.
I have a new way to make money.
Yeah, like
I could lease out my rent my Mac Pro to Alex.
There you go.
No, you're glad. Please borrow it.
I'd love to play with it.
Yeah, yeah. How long?
Well, a couple days.
That's okay.
I'm always gone for.
I'll be shaking a little bit, but I'll
like
survive.
Two or 3 days, like Thursday and Friday. Can I borrow it Thursday and Friday?
You can borrow it Thursday and Friday.
Okay.
Actually, one of the things that I did notice is the one I got is the base model, except for we did upgrade there. Or Ed, actually. Thank you, Ed. Edgar Ingberg upgraded the RAM slightly to 16 gigs. But the 250 gig SSD filled up pretty quickly.
Yeah, you got to really use external. I mean, you just put your apps on it.
I had an external SSD from Otherworld Computing that I plugged in, but it's USB. There's not. We need more Thunderbolt 2. No, Thunderbolt's not enough even. There's a lot of. I got a Buffalo Thunderbolt device. It's really just kind of a USB. It's the same speed as the USB 3.
So you should try mine.
What do you have? I need a Thunder.
I have a kind of a Frankenstein one.
Do you have the Promise?
No. My external drives when I'm on the road. So when I'm on the road, I need external drives, and I need to be able to swap the drives out, but I need a Thunderbolt interface. And so what I do is I buy Seagate makes these little Thunderbolt sleds for their drives. And then what I do is their drives are too slow. So what I do is I just buy raw SanDisk drives and then plug them in and then I tape them, you know, and then you plug them in and you get like 400 or 500 megs a second. And so you can move
them. Searched at airport security 93
it
times.
It does look pretty bad.
Really? You just strap it to your body or maybe get a vest.
And then I have a vest that goes like this.
Yeah, that's good.
That would be awesome.
Put it in your Scotty vest.
It works. You got to put a couple of business cards underneath it because there's like a little. I do have a Scotty vest.
I just think there's a lot of deceptive stuff that says it's Thunderbolt, but it's not that fast. The internal PCIe dual channel Thunderbolt, or not Thunderbolt, PCIe dual channel internal SSD is reading at almost a gigabyte. Byte a second.
That's so crazy.
973 megabytes a second. So I want that on my external too.
But what do you need it for?
For my data drive. Because I'm just using. So
what is using a gigabyte?
Well, it's not. I mean, it's fast enough. I'm using external data drive.
I don't understand what you're talking about.
I feel I got it. I should have it.
When I bought a TCI, they said that they said why would you ever need 122 megabytes
exactly
of disk space?
Exactly.
And I was like, because I'm working on audio.
If you spent out the butt for your Mac Pro, you don't want to put a USB 3 drive on it. That's why Alex
going
Lindsay
back to dial up.
Are there people making true Thunderbolt 2 storage? I guess we saw some at CES, but it's not yet available.
They're going to be expensive.
They'll be very expensive. There's a Promise enclosure, RAID 5 enclosure that I think is true Thunderbolt 2. It's $700 for the enclosure minus the drives, but then you could put any old. But you want SSD.
You're not going to get the speed out of it.
You need SSD.
Even if you raid them, you need
the
SSD.
LaCie is the one I want. The little big disc, Thunderbolt 2. But I think that's going to be really expensive.
Worth it, Leo. Your time is valuable.
See, this is the problem with the Mac Pro. $3,000, but you have to have a $3,000 monitor, and you have to have a $3,000 RAID array.
That's how they get you.
And then you need the shoes, and you need the purse.
And the sunglasses. Like, don't forget the sunglasses.
It's like a Tesla owner. You know, you rarely meet a Tesla owner who doesn't also have the Tesla hat and the Tesla jacket.
That's exactly.
Oh, I shouldn't bring this up. It just makes me sound so...
No. I absolutely agree with you. I think that anybody who really thought out that purchase, if you really thought out before clicking that button, you either decided that an iMac or even a Mac Mini will serve your needs very, very well with a couple of extra accessories, or you decided that either today or in the near future, I'm going to need that. And if you did blow $3,000 on a desktop, part of you has to say that, well, if I don't want to leave performance on the table,
right?
The meaner way of saying that is like it's like losing $5,000 in blackjack and saying if I don't bet another $2,000 to get that money back, then I will have blown the first $5,000. But I definitely see your point. I mean, if you're going to put USB 3, why not just put USB 2? Why not put a Berkeley cartridge on it?
A lot of people are saying Drobo, but I got to emphasize there. You might have a Thunderbolt interface that does not mean that you're going to have the speed.
I'm willing to take another chance at Drobo, but I have a bunch of Drobos and I use them every day, but I've never seen a fast Drobo.
No,
that's not what they're.
This is
that's
the
not
one.
What
you,
known,
this is what you
for.
Want. I don't know what it's going to cost. It's the LaCie little big disc. It is Thunderbolt 2. They promise 1.3 gigs per second for 4K video editing. It's SSD in there.
And that's really where you'd need that kind of speed is 4K editing. Multiple layers of
4K. Or my iTunes library. Let's not discriminate.
Mm-hmm.
What's the starting price, Leo?
You got to be able to start that song fast.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't. It's so expensive, they actually don't put a price on it.
When it's slower, he's like, where's my Miley Cyrus?
Call us for a quote.
It is the SSDs are thermally coupled with the external aluminum enclosure to prove heat. It's dual PCIe SSDs.
Nuts.
They were showing us that thing at CES. Did you see one, Leo?
No.
Yeah, I mean, they took it apart. There's no fan. I mean, there is a fan, but it rarely turns on.
Well, that's the. Oh, by the way, that's another issue. The Mac Pro is so quiet that I actually hear the Buffalo spinning drive.
It's very frustrating.
It's annoying.
I understand.
I want all solid state or nothing.
Could you just get some earplugs and save yourself a bunch of money?
No, you don't understand.
That's what a good stereo system
Andy
is for.
Understands. You understand, Andy. You understand.
I understand. I may not approve, but I understand. Your logic is sound, even though it may be an ideology that I can. Even though I do not pray to your God, I understand why you love your God.
Well, so. And I'm pointing out that if any of you at home are interested in a Mac Pro, that you have to understand that it's not just $3,000, even the base unit, because, well, you got to get a 30K 4K display, $3,500. And you got to get at least one.
If you want to get your full value. But the reality is, if you're doing 3D.
You don't buy this thing.
I don't need a 4K monitor right now.
Well, I don't have one right now.
My eyes aren't that good. I have enough trouble with this monitor. It's not even 4K, and I'm like squinting at it. Like, what's going on?
All I'm saying is that if I bought a Mac Pro, every single fraction of a second that I'm looking at a spinning beach ball would fill me with a white hot rage that it would seek an immediate outlet.
Precisely. Precisely. And no sound. You don't want any sound.
No.
Right.
Everything should be very quiet until I play Miley Cyrus.
Exactly.
It should be loud.
That wrecking ball, you know.
Squares.
It's all about the wrecking ball.
Path to madness.
It is literally the path to madness, Renee. You have nailed it.
Some of
three,
us.
3-4 came on years later. Leo's still not happy.
Exactly. You cannot win.
No.
Some of us are on the journey within. Some of us are not.
I bought a $2,500 Mac 128K with one 400 kilobyte swappy floppy.
Paying ever since.
I'm still paying the Macy's bill.
Can I just say that all I had to do, and when I was a teenager, all I had to do was wait like 2 or 3 years, and I was able to buy a Mac 512 for $94. that has laid out my path in hardware ownership for life. That if I wait a little bit longer, so long as I never have to render out a Pixar short on my desktop, I can save about 90%.
This is a guy who only shops at the MIT flea market.
Well, actually, the $90 Mac 512 that was actually broken because it was in the computer store that I worked at, and I'm the one who broke it. And as soon as it, the automatic markdowns went down to a place where I could afford it, I bought it. Then went back in and reattached the internal cable that I disconnected.
Here is a breaking story. Thank you to the chat room for this, Stephen Troughton Smith. Hello, I'm Stephen Troughton Smith. He's an app developer. He has posted images on Twitter minutes ago of the upcoming iOS in the car interface. Unclear, according to Mac Rumors, how he got the images, but you can see the images on Stephen Troughton Smith's Twitter feed. I don't see the images here. I want to see them.
He's a crazy smart developer, and he's cross-platform too. Like he's at every one of the Apple and Google and Windows events. He's fairly terrific.
I guess Mac Rumors was so nervous they didn't even want to put the images there.
Didn't they have a link there?
When was the last time they got nervous?
I know, really. Wow.
Well, if they have something that is not. If it was a press photo that they don't have rights to,
maybe they've seen it in other forms, right? And they don't want to.
Yeah.
What is Stephen Troughton Smith's Twitter handle? Do you know that off the top of your head, Renee?
S. Troughton Smith.
S. T. R. U. G. H. T. O. N. Smith. I didn't know you could have handles that long. You're right. Steve T. S. It's not coming up. Because our internet has decided to go down to protect me from myself.
Yeah, Stephen Smith.
Our show today, you can exercise for left to the viewer or listener. Anything to say about the iOS for the car? I mean, that's exciting.
I'm looking forward to it. I want iOS for the home. I think, you know, doing bidirectional AirPlay to other displays, I think could be great for Apple if they push it through.
Here's Maps.
I still think Apple should just make cars.
Safety warning. So basically, the point of this that when you plug in your iPhone, it takes over the display in the car, or is this in the car already? No, this is your iPhone going to
it's just a conduit, right?
Yeah,
It's just
it's like AirPlay to the Apple TV, but the car can send stuff back as well.
Ah. Right. Ooh. So the car, you could use the car GPS. Maybe. Maybe you wouldn't want to.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe you wouldn't want to. But just the ability to have that that low level of interactivity between the center screen, access to the touch screen, and also access to the mechanical clicky buttons that are on the dashboard or on the steering wheel, and not just have it be a dumb Bluetooth, like connect okay, but actually be part of the user interface, that's potentially huge. But just their ability to demonstrate how effectively they can broadcast iOS is also a big deal if you think about all the other devices they could broadcast an iOS interface to.
Yeah.
So they don't have to make a TV set. They don't have to make an interactive, you know, curling iron. They could just simply have a small chipset that can just simply work with whatever iOS device you already have.
Or a microwave.
I want iOS on my camera, please.
Our show today brought to you by Squarespace.com, the secret behind some of the best websites on the net, including our own Inside Twit blog. The beauty of Squarespace, it never goes down. It's the best hosting ever, plus fabulous content management system on top of it. Squarespace is always improving the platform with new features, new designs, better support. Not that they don't have the best support in the business. That's why they won a Golden Stevie Award for their excellent 24/7 support right out of New York City, their home office. The designs, well, you start with 20 beautiful templates, really gorgeous, all of them mobile responsive, all of them e-commerce ready, but then you customize it. And by the way, you don't have to be a developer to do that. You can do it with a point and click. You can add all sorts of widgets for social media and so forth. You can have your portfolio on there if you're a photographer. Of course, if you are a coder, if you know JavaScript, CSS, they've got a beautiful developer platform as well. So easy to use, so well supported, and then everything is mobile ready, mobile responsive design. And they have a new app, by the way, the Squarespace Metric app for iPhone and iPad, which is lets you check your stats, page views and unique visitors, social media follows. That is really nice. So you got the blog app, which allows you to put content up there, approve comments, tap and drag images to change layouts. And then now the Metric app, which lets you keep track of all of your analytics. Very nice. And all of this, $8 a month. When you buy an annual plan, and that includes a free domain name. If you want to sign up for commerce, $24 a month. They don't take a slice of the action. By the way, they will help you with tax calculations, with shipping. They'll help you with coupon codes, even inventory tracking. Unlimited digital, physical, or service products. I mean, it's such a great thing.
We have a project we're working on right now. With Squarespace or using Squarespace.
Yeah.
We were like developing all this stuff and they're like, well, we want it to work. It's a training platform. It's a training thing. And we want it to work on all the tablets and we want it to work on websites. And so there was this kind of offhanded response like, why don't we just see if we can just build this on Squarespace? And it turns out you can. so we're building the whole training thing, you know, that just, it's all built around just using Squarespace to,
that's neat,
to develop the whole thing.
That's one thing that Squarespace is so good for, is just this kind of quick and dirty site. You can actually, if you get 2 weeks free without even a credit card, if that's sufficient, you could do something really quickly. They don't even mind if you do that. They're very nice about it. Squarespace.com. When you buy, by the way, use the offer code MacBreak1 for January, MacBreak1, and you will get the first 10% off your first new account. So that's a nice deal, too. MacBreak1. Squarespace.com. Time now for our picks of the week. I see Alex reaching into his magic bag. He's kind of like Santa. But let's start with our guest, Dave Hamilton, from Mac Geek Gab and the Mac Observer, soon to be playing his drums at the Flint Center this Saturday. When do you fly down?
I fly on Friday. We have a rehearsal Friday night, and then that's that.
You know they're going to be good if they're rehearsing.
Yeah, we rehearse once whether we need it or not.
I can't wait. Do you have anything? I don't know if they warned you. Do you have anything to pick?
Yeah, they warned me mid-show. So I thankfully had this thing here. It's from Anchor, IANKER.com. For $26, you get a it's a charger, right? You plug it into your AC outlet.
Yep.
And it's got 5 ports on it. But the cool part is it pushes 8 amps across those 5 ports. And it can do it in any combination you like. There aren't some ports that are only 2 and some that are 1. And this is important. If you've got an iPad or you know, something that needs more than that, it'll charge your Android stuff just as easily as it'll charge your iPhone or your iPad. And that's actually kind of a big deal because the 2-amp requirements for iPads and 2-amp requirements for Android tablets are different. The devices actually do a handshake with the USB port. And if they don't get the handshake they want, they go down to just 1-amp like normal USB. So yeah, this thing's pretty cool. I was using it while I was out at CES and I was able to charge everything simultaneously, no problem at all. So that's my pick. And it's like $26 too. So,
I'm a huge Anker fan. I buy everything Anker. They're kind of the Apple of battery stuff.
I agree.
you get a nice little thing in the box.
It's so nice to touch their batteries. Yeah.
And I always get Anker. I have a number of Anker external charges, but I also get Anker external, you know, extra batteries for my phones and stuff like that. I just love Anker.
Yeah.
A-N-K-E-R. It's I-A-N-K-E-R .com.
.com.
Andy Anatko, what do you got for us?
This is one of my favorite alternate presentation apps. It's by Boink Software. It's called Photo Presenter. It's just 99 cents in the iOS App Store because I love I think Keynote is one of the greatest mobile apps ever made. The ability to do such beautiful, formal presentations on the mobile device is just unsurpassed. But it's not every presentation you give is a linear presentation. We're going to start at point A and go through point 12 or whatever. Oftentimes, you just know that you're going to be talking for about 30 minutes, or there's going to be a meeting. A lot of different topics are going to come up, and you want to be able to dynamically display whatever piece of information is going to be relevant at that time. And that's what Photo Presenter is all about. All it really does is it's essentially like a photo viewer. On the presentation device, there's a tray of like everything that you think is relevant. You can also look at albums that are on the device. And when it's not showing something, it will show like just whatever stock image that you want, like your company logo or meeting notes or whatever like that. But as soon as you decide that, we're talking about China now, so if I tap this, now people will see a picture from the Apple Store. And then when someone says, but if we have a presence in China, won't there be knockoffs? And you say, well, yeah, I got to admit that when I was in China, I was able to see a whole bunch of like Apple knockoff phones. As a matter of fact, I actually bought a knockoff iPhone 3G. This was a few years ago. This is what I'm talking about. And then when they say, wow, you've got a lot of travel photos here. Say, well, yeah, well, that's where I met Llewellyn. I did carpool. And this is my picture of the Sagrada Familia. And I don't know if you noticed it, if you know that, but ham is a really big deal in Spain. There's so in Barcelona. So you can actually buy ham-flavored ruffles. And so when I was in London, I tried to get a picture of the cows at the Abbey Road crossing. So basically, if you've got like attention deficit disorder and you're just going to be leaping from topic to topic, but you don't know what's going to be handy. I mean, this is just absolutely the perfect app for that sort of thing. I mean, I'm joking, but there really is a need for this kind of an app. Because I use it a lot when I sometimes am invited to interview like comic creators on stage at comic conventions. And what I will do is I will load up this app with just, if it's an artist, just images that they've drawn from all their comics. Because if they start getting into a story about, you know, working with Bernie Wrightson, it's nice to be able to happen to have a cover of that comic handy. You suddenly tap something and there it is on the big screen. 99 cents. Extra features are in-app purchases, like again the ability to replace like the photo presenter icon with whatever you want to establish as the not showing anything screen. That's one of them. The ability to have a highlighter and a spotlight thing. That's another in-app purchase. But the core feature is 99 cents, and it's incredibly so. It's a nice thing to have. I bring this up a lot in terms of. When it comes to iPhone apps and iPad apps, there are apps that they cost 99 cents. It's good to have them on the device already at the time when you realize that, oh, man, I really wish Keynote could do this. Well, Keynote doesn't do this, but fortunately, I happen to have Photo Presenter, which will do exactly what I wanted to do. Great, I already have that.
That's neat. I'm going to have to buy it right now. Photo Presenter from, it's Boinks.
Boinks.
We love Boinks.
We love Boinks. Yeah. Boinks is very lovable.
Yeah. And we always have what's his name from Boinks on the show when he's in town.
Oliver.
Yes. Oliver, whatever his name is.
Reinhardt. I can't mispronounce it, but yes.
He's going to get mad at me. Is it Oliver or Olivier? It's Oliver.
Oliver, I think.
Oliver.
By the way, congratulations, Dave. You have killed iAnchor.com. So well done.
Hey, that's my job. That's what I do.
The Twit Army will not be defeated.
We the Twit recommendations, we really are the magical monkey's paw, because they'll there's a company saying, oh, I wish that Twit or another big show like that would recommend and really speak highly of our product. And the devil says, we will grant you your wish. What you should have asked for is that. And our servers were able to actually capitalize on all those referrals and convert them into sales.
There's no.
But you didn't, so.
It's not by accident that we recommend Squarespace before we do the Pixel.
That's a good point.
Sorry, Anchor.
At the end of this, we go, and if you had been using Squarespace, you would still have your site.
All of Anchor's stuff is also sold on Amazon. So you can always go to Amazon and search for Anchor. And I don't think we've brought Amazon down yet.
But it's a goal, though.
It's a goal. I could retire.
Everyone can dream.
Alex Lindsay, what you got there?
I got Google Maps engine. I got two things.
All right.
Okay, so one little software one. Okay, so this is kind of a cool app. So oftentimes we're trying to analyze audio coming in, you know, in our mm-hmm. pipeline, mm-hmm. and you want something that you can just kind of grab. And there's a little program called Analyzer for your iPad. And so what it'll do is you can get a. So here you can see this is here, a.
Do we have an over the shoulder for Alex, or should I? Hold it up on my side here. Okay. So here it is. It's called Analyzer?
It's called Analyzer.
Analyzer.
And what you're seeing there is it's just using the mic that it has, and it's analyzing it. So a lot of times we're looking for, I mean, what I'm looking for is whether we're getting some odd, you know, sound. See? Now you know the pitch of... So when Leo generates a tone, it's at about 500 hertz.
Ooh. See, the overtones are screwing it up. Yeah.
Now, if you go down, if you hit the little button below.
This is hypnotic, just watching it.
Yeah, and if you go
octave?
Down.
Wave your arms when you start talking again, because I've got my headphones off right now.
Right, sorry.
Exactly. So, yeah, you can change the octaves. That's a pretty coarse one, actually.
Oh, yeah, so that's better.
But there's other graphs. So if you click on that little in the little menu button on the lower right.
The hamburger. Yeah.
And go up and go FFT plot.
Oh. So ooh, that's pretty.
So beyond this, being just cool.
Is this really expensive before I get to
it? No,
it's
not that expensive. I don't know how much it is. Hold on. Okay. It's a credit card. I'd have to look at how much this costs actually. Now what I do with it, now if you go down again.
Yeah.
And click on the menu.
Window hamming?
The little menu. No. Go over to the menu and then go to spectrograph.
Ooh, that's pretty.
Now, this one I use actually probably more. So what this is doing is giving you kind of a heat map of your sound. And what this is really good for is if you can visually see if there's a buzz being added to your line. You know, because you'll see it up in the 10 hertz. You'll see this little line going across, and that's noise.
It's really handy.
You know, and so, that becomes really useful. And so this is a way to analyze it. Now, coming through your microphone is not going to be that useful, but you can use something like this. This is a little interface.
You have a noise generator?
No, it'll generate. That'll generate.
Yeah, it has a tone.
It'll generate tone. Which
this is we should have this. This is really great.
Yeah, and so.
All right. What's this thing?
Now, what that does is if you want to get your signal in, your XLR signal.
Oh, so you can put a microphone
You can just pop it into the microphone jack. Yeah. And that's like $30 on Amazon. I mean, there's a lot of them that make those. Anyway, and there's a couple of different interfaces. I've been kind of playing around with a lot of them. I bought probably five or six of these sound analyzation tools. And this is the one that I like the best. I mean, there a lot of them are very similar, but this is as far as an interface and ease of use. There's ones with more features. There's a lot of different things that you can do.
Is this DSP mobile?
Yeah,
and that's $15.
And I spent some of them are like $100. I bought them all.
If you bought this in hardware, this would be thousands.
Oh,
so
yeah, yeah.
This
yeah.
is really nice,
and it allows you to really dig.
Oh, and they do have some in-app purchases. So,
right.
Yeah.
And so anyway, there are. I really like this one a lot for the price. You know, I think there's some that are a little bit more expensive that I've that I've gotten that I like too, but this one I'm trying to be nice. And
you're going to want to at least so it's $15 and you're going to want to spend another $3 at least for using the built-in microphone. Although it supports Apogee's mic, which is great.
Right.
You can also use the Apple earphones or earpods, but you're going to have to buy.
But what you really want is something. I mean, for me, when I'm analyzing this stuff, I want a line in, you know, because what I'm looking at is. And what's really useful for this is you can say you're hearing something, but it's a lot when you're talking to the audio engineer going, you have sound in the line.
They never believe you.
They'll be like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. Right. And then you show them a picture of, see this right here?
See that heat map? See that line?
That is a ground loop.
That is so great.
You know, yeah. And so it's And it also lets
this is
you,
good for bar bets.
I never thought of using it as bar bets, but
you know,
it's a good one.
I hear a high-pitched tone. Do you?
No.
Right, well, let me show you the spectral analysis.
Yes, exactly. So, anyway, that's my pick. My second pick is just this is just darn.
What's the URL? I'm so having trouble with my internet.
Mapsengine.google.com. Okay. And if you haven't seen this, yeah, you have to. It's crazy. So,
this is an interface to Google Maps, or
yeah, but it's a developer interface, and so but it's much easier. And so Alan Goldberg in South Africa met me in Rwanda and showed me this.
So let me create. Should I create a new map or should I open a map?
You should create a new map.
Okay.
Well, I'll create a new map because it's easier for. Well, I don't know. If you'd be able to see it.
You create a map and share it with me, and then I would be able to see it. So this is a neat thing.
So I'm going to create a map.
And there's some classic My Maps. Like,
yeah, so you can.
Here's my walk to work. Oh, we played laser tag. Exactly. And I can import the laser tag KML file into this. And it'll give you this is me running around playing laser tag. So that was kind of fun.
So what I can
let's do something else.
This one will work. Here.
Maps engine.
So I can go in here and I
let me create a new map. I'm gonna play with it too. You play with it, and I'll play with it.
Okay. So, but you can basically bring in Excel files, and so you can have a lot of information. And what's cool about it is you can build a map. And it used to be you have to figure out the GPS for coordinates, and you had to do a lot of other things.
Right.
Now you just have cities. You know, like it's just all you need is the raw cities. So here's for instance, I'm importing a.
The other thing is you have 9 different backgrounds you can import on top of. So this is there's a terrain background, so you can see elevations. There's the satellite map. You can have a political map, which means merely state divisions on it, light or dark. You can have this is a white water, so water is white, so you can see all the bodies of water.
So we had a form. We have these forms for a lot of the events that we do that. So this was a form. Everyone just filled out the form and just put their city.
Yeah.
And so here I just imported this from our database.
So you can import in a CSV or an XLSX file. So, in fact, you can even use Google Google Drive itself to have somebody fill out a form and then automatically import those values.
I haven't tried to automatically do it yet, but we've exported it.
It's easy enough to do manually, yeah.
Right, and so you import it. And so here's like, for instance, this is a distribution. For those of you listening, this is a whole bunch. It's a distribution of a lot of people that signed up for this specific event. And I click on one of these dots, and it's all the information that was in the database.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't do anything.
That is really nice. And so, I wish I could show you that.
Yeah, but anyway, it's a pretty slick little tool.
What is the limit? Somebody, Geek Forever in a chat room, says there is a limit to the number of pins.
I think there's a limit of a couple
quite
hundred.
A few pins.
I think this. Yeah, I got the pro one for $5 a month.
Oh, okay.
So the pro one's like $5 a month.
I see.
And then you can have up to 2,000 pins. And then I think that there's a developer one, which they don't have the price for, which I'm going to find out, which is, I think, 100,000 pins or something like that.
Wow.
And you can have multiple layers. And so you can set it up. And it's definitely a rabbit hole. I just didn't. And I don't think it's super new, but until Alan Goldberg in South Africa had shown it to me, I didn't know it existed. And it's crazy awesome. And
Google Maps Engine.
It's definitely worth playing with.
Very cool.
Yep.
A couple of cool things. Mm-hmm. Finally, let's wrap up with Renee Ritchie and your pick of the week, Renee.
I have both a complaint of the week and a pick of the week.
I think we should call it a bitch of the week.
I'll start with the bitch of the week then. So a couple of years ago, Apple introduced AirPrint, which is a fantastic way to print from your iPad or iPhone to a network attached or a Wi-Fi printer in your vicinity. But what they didn't roll out is print to PDF. Now, I understand this feature actually exists. I don't know if it was ever finished or not, but if you've ever wanted to just, you can take a screenshot on iOS, that's true, but it's only the screen. If you ever want to share a complete web page in a packaged form, the same way you have the wonderful PDF features on the Mac where you can just save something as a PDF, like a receipt or a web page or basically anything you want, that same capability could exist on iOS, but either, it hasn't made it into the feature pipeline or people don't think it's an important enough feature or enough people would want it. But there's been several occasions where I've just wanted to make a PDF out of the content that's on my iPhone. And if Apple could add that in, if they could squeeze it into the pipeline, I would be super really grateful to them. So that's my complaint of the week.
Okay.
My pick of the week is Storehouse, which is at storehouse.co. It's a website and an iPad app. It's created by Mark Quano and his team. Mark Quano was at Frog Design. Then he worked on the interface of Photoshop. Then he worked on building Aperture at Apple. And finally, he was user experience evangelist at Apple until about last year when he left and went into, you know, his own company. And he's been working on this since then. I've been part of the beta, so I've had a, you know, the pleasure of watching it develop. And he's a photographer. He loves photography, and he always wanted a way for photography to at least have an equal chance at being a storytelling mechanism on mobile, because there's so many really good text-based platforms and writing apps. And he wanted a way for people to be able to easily and quickly take their photographs and make really beautiful looking stories that they could easily share. So with Storehouse, you can pull photos from Instagram, from your camera roll, from Flickr, from all these different sources. You start off with a template. You can pull images in. You can very quickly move them around. It's got the kind of interface you expect from a guy whose job it was to criticize interface at Apple. So it's very physics-based. Things float around. You can move them around easily. You can stretch them. They'll bounce and snap into the right sizes. So it's hard to put things in the wrong places. And then it's really, really easy to share them. Once you've built them, you just create an account. You can see other people's stories that they've shared, and then you can easily construct and share your own. Right now, it only works on the web and on the iPad. But, you know, we're used to using Flipboard. We're used to using all these things that are existing in those one places. So it hasn't been a detriment to me. And, you know, if you don't want to go to Pages and actually make a document, if you want something more than what and if you don't want to do the work that it would require to do it in WordPress or Tumblr or, you know, Foursquare or something like that, this is just a really easy way. It does video and images, so you can have those beautiful, slightly moving pictures as well. And they just, it's not finished, like it's not bristling with features yet, but the features that it does have, they really knocked out of the park.
Excellent. Excellent choice. Well, we got some really good picks this week. I'll tell you, we'll put them in the show notes. At twit.tv/MBW. That's where you can find the show, of course. Download it, listen to audio or video. You can watch live. We do it Tuesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC. Don't forget the Mac 30th is coming up Saturday. Dave Hamilton and the Mac All-Stars will be performing there. Mac30th.com for tickets. Dave, it's great that you're coming out. Look forward to it. And we'll have you back real soon. MacObserver.com and, of course, MacGeekGab at MacObserver.com. Always a pleasure. Oh, he's,
yeah, thanks for
you've
having
muted
me.
your octopus. What do they call it? The squid?
It yeah, I'm going to use a different mic when I come on again. Everybody's giving me a hard time. I'll use the PR40 up in the studio.
You sounded
but
fine.
It's not bad.
No, it sounds great. It sounds great. Bad. I'm not a fan of USB mics in general, but this sounds fine. It sounds fine. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We're snobs here. And you don't use it.
Listen, I get it. I'm a snob too.
Your Mac Geek Gab has the best sound of any podcast in the nation. So we know that you know. We know you know.
It's how we roll.
Thanks, Dave. Great to have you. Thank you, Andy Iannacco, Chicago Sun-Times. Always a pleasure. If you ever decide
to... you got a great microphone.
Yeah.
And we know that you know that we know that you know you got a great microphone.
Hey, Norton.
Why are you...
Turn the moon, Alice. So, Andy, if you ever want to get out of this snow and move to beautiful California, I've got a seat here for you. You know that.
Seriously. Like this it's real. I don't have a guy who delivers wood. I have to go drive someplace and like take all the stuff out of the trunk of my car. So a morning like this, when I'm seeing the swirling flakes, and I know that I got an hour to get all this stuff and barricade myself again. And moose, Leo. We have wandering moose. And are they polite? No, they're not. When they want something, they let you know, and they're not leaving until they get it.
I'm telling you, Andy, I would give you a full time job in a heartbeat. So come move out, but you have to move out here. That's the only. The only caveat. We're actually very actively looking. In fact, if you know, we're looking for reporters, anchors, hosts. We are very actively looking. And so, Andy, if you want to be out here, I'd love to. You don't need a guy who delivers wood out here.
It's optional. It's not.
It's optional.
We have munchkins.
You don't need it. It's purely recreational.
We don't have moose. We do have deer, but no moose. Always a pleasure, Andy.
Thanks, Leo. Always
just
great.
Think about life on the West Coast. It's waiting for you.
Yes.
Like the West Coast Avengers.
I'm not sure. I'm used to that 3-hour head start on my West Coast Avengers. That's literally the only thing that's...
You know what? That's a good point. You would lose that, wouldn't you?
He could still get up early.
Yeah, wake up at 6.
No.
No.
Terrible idea.
Instead of bringing wood, they bring fine Chablis and Brie. Alex Lindsay, he's visiting from out of town. But is always welcome. It's great to have you once again. Thanks for being here.
It's good to be here.
See you soon.
Yeah.
And, of course, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. Always good, always better, always best. Never let it rest till your good is better and your better is best. Just a little something I remember from fifth grade. Thank you for joining us on Mac Break Weekly. Now back to work because break time is over.
We use .com here, not .bomb.
Oh, not bomb. Aw, man.
Not bomb.
Darn.
Hey, if I could get .bomb, I would.
Harvester that's got it. And he's...
What country is .bom? That would be good. I'll take
TSA
it.
TSA is not a fan. Thanks for catching.
It's my URL. What are you talking about? I say bomb, I mean .bom.
With Mutas Grill.
Oh, I'm sorry. I did not realize you did not want Amazon.bom. So according to this, my site looks exactly like to yours, including the credit card captioning.
Ooh. So
please enjoy the 40 pounds of beats that I just built to your express card.